Thank you, Ari. Thank you, April. Well, good evening and welcome everyone to the October 5th, 2021 regular Board of Directors meeting for the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency. This is item one, and we are calling the meeting to order. And we'll move on to item two, Pledge of Allegiance. And I'd like to welcome Director Braunstein back by asking her to kindly recite the Pledge of Allegiance, if she doesn't mind. And I'd ask everyone else to mute your devices and please remain seated. Director Braunstein.
Sorry, one second. We don't have it on screen. Okay.
It should be. Can you not see it?
No, it's fine. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I apologize for my dyslexia.
Thank you, Director Braunstein. Before we move on to item three, I have a number of updated announcements. So you might hear some different announcements than we've made in the past. So please give it your full attention. This meeting is being conducted pursuant to the provisions of AB 361 and SCV Water Resolution SCV-235. Board and staff, please mute all of your devices until you are ready to speak to avoid feedback, echoing, and background noise. Make sure you unmute when speaking and remute when you are done speaking. All board members, please turn on your camera during the meeting. Staff, please turn on your cameras when speaking and turn them off when you are done speaking. Board members will be advised to use the raise hand feature in Zoom when action and discussion items are presented. I will call on each of you when it is your turn to speak. Members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda during item three. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in this agenda may do so at the time each item is considered. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in closed session before they are considered by the board must request to make comment at the commencement of the meeting at 6:30. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please remute when requested. Please do not turn on your cameras unless you are speaking during public comment, and then please turn them off when you have completed your comments. To participate in public comment by phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. When you are finished with your public comment, staff will re-mute you. Please be familiar with the last two digits of your phone number. In an attempt to help with the flow of the meetings and alleviate confusion, we have changed the procedure for approving items and taking public comment. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will then ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from the board. Please raise your hand. Once concluded, I will ask for a motion and a second. After any further discussion, the board secretary will call roll for votes. Any PowerPoints shown at tonight's meeting are posted on the SCV Water website. The board secretary will be doing attendance by roll call, and each action item being considered will be taken by a roll call vote. Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll for attendance?
Director Armitage, are you present?
Present.
Director Cooper, are you present?
Present.
Director Braunstein, are you present?
Present.
Director Kelly, are you present?
Present.
Director Colley, are you present?
I'm here.
Director Atkins, are you present?
Present.
Director Ford, are you present?
Present.
Director Osohowski, are you present?
Present.
Director Plambeck, are you present?
Yes, I'm here.
Vice President Gladbeck, are you present?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen, are you present?
Present.
President Martin, are you present?
I am present.
Thank you. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you very much. We move on to item three, public comments. Members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda at this time.
President Martin, we do have a public comment from Ms. Dunn on closed session. Did you want to take that one first?
Okay, I think that's probably a good idea. So we will go ahead and take Ms. Dunn's public comment on closed. Are there any other members of the public commenting on closed session?
Mr. Petzold has his hand up, but I'm not sure it's on closed session, but we'll verify with him before.
All right. Ms. Dunn, please proceed with your public comment on closed session.
Ms. Dunn, hold on just a moment. Ms. Dunn, please go ahead and hit star six, and you may begin your public comment. Ms. Dunn?
Okay, I am ready. Thank you for letting me actually talk about what happened at the last closed session of your last meeting. We expect a conscientious and accurate report on the closed sessions. If the public has to correct the attorney, shouldn't the public get paid his fees? And I might add, this is not the first time that this has happened. I'm not sure which attorney it was, but several months ago, we had a similar problem. And maybe it's because the meeting goes so late and there's so long discussions that he just was not aware that he had not given an answer as to what had happened at the second issue. So, he can be excused for that, but it is the second time that it has happened about closed sessions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dunn.
All right, we are back to item three, public comments. I will begin again. Members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda at this time. We ask that members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in this agenda may do so at the time each item is considered. We do have two written comments, which I will read because I appreciate the effort that was made to do that. But Madam Secretary, do we have any live public comments at this time?
We do. Mr. Petzold, you may begin your public comments.
Yes, thank you very much. I was disappointed when I checked the agenda this morning to find that at your September 28th meeting, you had adopted Resolution 235. Specifically, I'm concerned that although the criterion was met that there be an emergency order by the governor local county officials urging social distancing, I do not believe there is an imminent threat from COVID-19. Imminent risk has a specific legal definition. That is an immediate and impending threat of a person causing physical injury to self or others. Those conditions simply don't exist. Other public agencies in this community are meeting in public. That includes the Hart District and the city of Santa Clarita. I have no idea why you would fearmonger the public by saying that there's an imminent risk to attending one of your meetings in person. You certainly have enough room up in your chambers there to accommodate the public with social distancing. So I respect those directors who voted no on Resolution 235. I note that it should be up again for consideration again in 30 days. And I ask you to please allow the public to come and attend your meetings in person. And do not hold out this imminent risk, which simply does not exist in this community at this time. Your resolution says nothing about natural immunity, says nothing about the fact that three vaccines are available to the public, that 70% of the public in Santa Clarita is already vaccinated against this virus. please just stick to the facts and don't mislead the public into thinking that there's an imminent risk with our community. What does that say about the other public agencies around here? Is the city of Santa Clarita putting people's lives at risk by holding their meetings? How about the Heart District? How about our students who go to school every day? Are they at imminent risk? I don't think so. I ask you not to renew Resolution 235 and commence having meetings in public so that we can fully participate and attend in your meetings. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Petzl.
April, are there any other public comments?
There are not.
Thank you very much.
Oh, hold on. There are a few that just popped back up. Hold on just a moment. Ms. Ford, you may begin your public comment.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. I have questions regarding what I reviewed on SCB Water's credit card charges from April through June 2021. I kind of looked over this, and one thing that came out to me immediately was this $3,500 in Amazon gift cards for employee birthdays. I'm not quite sure if that counts as an operating cost, and it doesn't sit well with me when we're reviewing continuing virtual meetings and trying to find the cost to do that. And the cost for that factors into, you know, you guys deciding to allow us to continue these virtual meetings, yet you're spending $3,500 on gift cards for birthdays. That needs to get addressed. I'm also seeing several charges for vending machine supplies. So how are these getting credited back? I'm seeing hundreds of dollars of vending machine supplies going out. Where's the money that goes into those machines to buy those things? What is the accounting on that looking like? I'm also wondering, why are political contributions and sponsor fees being made through the ratepayers? SCB Water paid $1,500 for silver membership for Catherine Barger's State of the County address hosted by the SCB Chamber of Commerce. Why are ratepayers paying for admission fees for directors to attend? I'm seeing two charges for Director Martin. I mean, there's several individual charges for you guys to be going to this thing, but for you guys to pay for a sponsorship for her event, that shouldn't be happening through the ratepayers. If you on a personal level want to support that woman, that needs to come out of your pockets, not ours. I mean, I'm looking at multiple charges here, all of these supply fees, office fees, and none of them are itemized. So how do we know what is being spent here? It just looks like excessive spending, and I need to understand if there is even a budget in place, and are we sticking to that budget? And before I run out of time, yesterday there were four SCB water trucks on the sidewalk in Westridge on Westridge Parkway, driving on the sidewalk, four of your trucks. And I had a neighbor walking with her dog with the trucks creeping behind her. They do not belong on our sidewalks. There is a street right next to where they were doing work. And if your trucks cannot fit into where that water tank section is, we're out on the street, figure something else out, because they do not need to be driving on our sidewalks. That is an incredible safety problem, and I don't want to see that again. So whoever needs to address that, they need to get that addressed. I have photos and video of that happening, and that needs to stop. That's all.
Thank you. Thank you for your public comment. There is one more. I do apologize if I pronounce your name incorrectly. Lisa Dolgal, you may begin your public comment.
Oh, McDougald?
McDougald, thank you. You may begin your public comment.
No problem. Thank you very much. I apologize for missing a couple of meetings. I didn't realize they were still hybrid, so that is why. I just want to say I personally appreciate and support continued hybrid meetings and thank the board for offering them. I have two persons at home who are immunocompromised, and I am grateful to be able to attend the water board meetings. Thank you for having them.
Thank you for your public comment. Is there any further public comment? President Martin, it does not appear so.
Very good. Thank you, April. Thank you, members of the public, for your comments. Before we go to item four, I wanted to mention that I did have two written comments, but they do pertain to item 6.2 on the agenda. So I will read them when we get to that item as we move along. So with that, we are at item four, approval of the agenda, with removal of items 6.1, 6.3, and 14.6. With that, I would entertain a motion for approval of the agenda with items 6.1, 6.3, and 14.6 removed.
Jerry moves.
Motion by Vice President Gladbach.
Second, Mortensen.
Second by Vice President Mortensen. Are there any public comments, April, on the item four?
No, there is not.
Is there any further board discussion before we call for the vote? Seeing none, Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Director Ozohowski, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Atkins, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Planbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Armitage, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Colley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Bronstein, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Cooper, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Kelly, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Gladbach, how do you vote?
Yes.
President Martin, how do you vote?
Yes.
Thank you. The agenda is approved. The amended agenda is approved with removal of items 6.1, 6.3, and 14.6.
Thank you, Board. We now can move on to item five, approval of the consent calendar. You have three items on the consent calendar tonight. I would entertain a motion for approval of the consent calendar.
This is Lynn Planbeck. I would second that, but I would like to pull or have a question on 5.2.
Is this one that you can take care of with a question, or do you want to have the presentation as a separate item from the consent calendar?
I guess I would like to have the presentation. Okay, I have a lot of questions on it. I tried to do a lot of research and I'm having trouble.
So we are pulling item 5.2 from consent calendar. Director Cooper, you made the original motion?
Motion to approve 5.1 and 5.3.
Very good. And Director Planbeck, you second that?
Yes.
All right. Before we ask for board discussion, are there any public comments, Madam Secretary?
No, there is not.
Very good. Any further discussion from the board? Seeing none, hearing none, please call the roll, Madam Secretary.
Director Bronstein, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Atkins, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Cooper, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Planbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Ozohowski, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Armitage, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Colley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Kelly, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Gladbach, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen, how do you vote?
Yes.
President Martin, how do you vote?
Yes.
The consent calendar is approved. That's items 5.1 and 5.3.
Very good. Thank you. We now take up item 5.2. This item is authorize the general manager to enter into a professional services agreement with Chris Helm Consulting for water resources strategic planning services. Mr. Stone, you are the presiding officer at the meeting tonight. Who would you rather, Mr. Cole, who would you like to make the presentation?
Yeah, Steve is here to answer questions as anticipated. Go ahead,
you're
Steve.
Here. Okay.
Great. If it's the board's pleasure, I can do a short presentation on the agenda item, if that's what you'd like, President Martin.
Yes, please.
Sure. Thank you, board members. Nice to see everybody. I had the opportunity to discuss this item in detail at the last Water Resources Committee meeting. We tried to explain the approach in the agenda cover for your review tonight, but I'll walk through kind of the key points of what we're asking for the board to consider. This would be a contract with Chris Helm Consulting. Chris Helm Consulting is a single proprietor, so he's basically just himself. He has worked in the water industry for many years, also the power industry. Really has a very good reputation of providing clients with strategic thought processes that he's been involved with through the history of his career. He's worked both in the public sector and private sector. Really work looking to have Chris help us engage with our resiliency planning efforts. You'll probably remember there's been a few presentations that our Director of Water Resources, Dirk Marks, has been able to give regarding the need to have enough information to make sound decisions as we're going forward with planning on some of our resiliency efforts. So specifically, we're looking for Chris Helm Consulting to help us with reviews of regulatory and political landscape in which we operate. That's continuing to change and evolve. It is a dynamic place to operate within, and somebody with the experience that this consultant brings to the table, I think, is going to help not only the staff, but the board ultimately in our decision-making process as we consider some of these next level decisions, things like sites reservoir, for example, or investment further in groundwater banking. So those are some very complicated decisions. They're complicated both from a resource perspective as well as cost and benefit to the community in which we serve. So we're looking for strategic assistance in those areas. We're also looking for Mr. Helm's experience specifically advancing our understanding of the ecosystem interaction with surface water and groundwater. As many of you know that have been involved with the groundwater sustainability planning efforts, that's an area now that both the Groundwater Sustainability Agency, as well as our agency, is having to engage in more robustly than previously the water agency has in those environmental values of the watershed. We also are looking for help from Mr. Helms Consulting to basically look at the water supply portfolio and facilitate economic analysis to best achieve value. So it's really that idea of these next investments that the water agency will be considering. What is the best cost benefit analysis approach to making some of those investments? So I think I'll stop there. As I mentioned, we had an opportunity to review this at committee. The committee's recommendation was that we move this forward. The contract is basically for a period of 20 months. It has an hourly rate of not to exceed a certain amount. That's $13,500 a month. And so the committee is recommending that the board authorize a contract with Chris Helm Consulting in an amount not to exceed $270,000. So with that, I don't know if Chair Ford of the Water Resources Committee wanted to say anything or not.
Before we take Chair Ford's comment, I would like that would entail board discussion, I think. So I really would like to have public comment before we hear from Chair Ford and other members and Director Planback and other members of the board. So, April, do we have any public comment on item 5.2?
We do not.
Very good. Then, Chair Ford, feel free to comment on this item. Then we'll take Director Planback's questions and further discussion.
Okay. Thank you, President Martin. As Mr. Cole mentioned, We did have this item in front of the committee, and the resiliency plan, the committee, I think, recognizes is a critical component moving forward. Mr. Helm is a bit of a polymath and has some unique talents that will help us a great deal in this effort. And so the committee voted to move this item onto the board and recommend approval, and in fact recommended it beyond consent. And so with that, I would wait to hear Director Planbeck's questions regarding this item, but I would move to approve this item.
Second, Atkins.
Director, you're on mute.
Very good, thank you. So we do have a motion and a second. Director Planbeck, please proceed with your questions.
All right, well, you know, we spend about $300,000 a year on legislative advocates that supposedly help us with these things, and they've been pretty well vetted. They've provided substantial curricula vitae for us to assess their abilities and understand what's happening. There's nothing like that here. And yet we're going to pay this person $300,000 or $270,000. So I tried to look around for where this came to the board. I found where it came to Water Resources in 2021. And it looks like $260,000 was allocated for legal planning. But then when the biennial budget came, which 21-22 is not in the document library, so I couldn't really check out any. All I could find was a presentation, and the presentation has just a block amount for Water Resources, which I assume included addressing the PFAS problem and some other issues. So I just feel like, you know, if you're going to ask for this amount of money, that we really need to have a little more information. We have a set of consultants that for engineering that have been vetted. We have a set of consultants that for legislative matters that have been vetted. And I don't feel like there is any vetting here. So I don't understand, for instance, what background he has in sustainability or water supply portfolio. I see where there's power and stuff. I mean, it's very vague. I am really concerned about supporting something that is this vague. And I would like to request that if this is not an emergency, which didn't come as an emergency item, that this be delayed and we be provided information on this person so that we really can make a board decision on it. I would also like to know where the extra $10,000 is coming from, because it looks like $260,000 was allocated for this, not $270,000. So those are my questions.
Thank you, Director Planbeck. It sounds to me like you're considering making a motion, a substitute motion to table this item. Do I interpret your comment correctly?
Yes, that would be a substitute motion to table. Not that I oppose doing any of this, but I just think the board needs more information.
Just as a point of order, if we get a second on that motion, the discussion would normally be terminated. So it'd be preferable to me to have the discussion at least conclude whether or not the information is available to us and that sort of thing before we get a second on the table.
Okay. I agree with that, Director Colley. So please, Director Cooper, you have your hand raised for discussion or question.
No, just a statement. And I was at Water Resources when this was brought up. Many years ago, I worked with Chris Helm at Metropolitan Water District in what we called short-term water resource planning, which was those operations that were within the next coming year. Chris Helm is a highly qualified, capable person. He left Metropolitan, went on his own, and has done very well, is well respected in the water community. And I think that he can bring just great knowledge to us in helping to put these plans together. So I'm very much in favor of moving this forward.
Director Cooper, did this come with a unanimous recommendation from the committee? Chair Ford?
Chair Ford would remember better than me.
Yes, there were no objections to moving it forward to the full board.
Very good, thank you. Are there any other questions or discussion?
You know, I just want to say that I completely respect Mr. Cooper's knowledge of this person, but the knowledge isn't there for the rest of the board to see because there's no curricular vitae, there's no history of employment or anything like that. And this is a lot of money. So I just would ask, I'm not trying to discourage that this person be hired. I would just like to be able to explain to constituents or whoever might ask why we hired this person. And I don't really see that we have that in the agenda packet.
Director Colley, you have your hand up.
So I was hoping that we were going to hear from staff as to the two questions that got raised. Is the information that Director Planbeck is asking for available? And two, is this time sensitive? I was hoping a staff would answer those questions.
So certainly, I'm not 100% on clear on the information that's being asked for. I heard maybe a resume. Is that what you're referring to, Director Planbeck?
Yes. Yes, a resume and where the extra money is coming out of the budget, because it looks like there's extra money beyond what was allocated for this. According to the presentation that was given to Water Resources, I mean, this is one of the problems. These presentations get given to Water Resources, and it's wonderful they all understand it, but the rest of the board doesn't.
So on the first question, could you just,
yes, where's the resume? Could you? I mean, I couldn't find it online. I'm sorry. I really tried to research this before I started asking this stuff. I researched on our website and Google for our water resiliency plan, which apparently is just in the making. It's not there yet. And then I researched for the budget. The budget is not posted. I could only find a short summary of it that was presented in one of our board meetings. So, I saw in the PowerPoint that it didn't say 270, it said 260. So that's where I was asking where the extra money was coming from.
So the budget that we've presented, and I'm not 100% sure if we're talking about the same budget either. I don't have the document that you're referencing in front of me. So the budget that we've put together included consulting in this arena for a certain amount, but I'm not recalling exactly the amount that you're referencing.
Well, it was a PowerPoint presentation that was given to Water Resources, and I can send it to you. That's any help. But it says 260, not 270. So
it would be helpful, Director Colley. Yes. So Director Colley, I'm not sure I can answer the question that Director Blumbeck has raised. I'm not sure I understand the information that she has.
Well, I think the important question was, is this time sensitive? If we were to table it and wait 2 weeks, would she have access to the answers that she, and presumably she would send you the information she's referencing and there would be discussion. If it's not time sensitive, then my inclination might be to second the motion and let her get the answers she's after.
Certainly, the answer to that question is not time sensitive.
All right.
So then, I don't see any other hands, so I think I will second the motion.
All right. So we have a motion to table and a second. Is there any other discussion before we take the vote on the substitute motion? Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll?
Director Cooper, how do you vote?
No.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
No.
Director Bronstein, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Armitage, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Kelly, how do you vote? Director Kelly? I'll come back to Director.
Yes.
Director. I'm sorry, Director Kelly?
Yes.
Thank you. Director Cawley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Osahofsky, how do you vote?
No.
Director Atkins, how do you vote?
Forgive me, I had to step away for a second. Can you please repeat the motion, Mr. Chair?
Mr. President. The motion is to table the item until the next board meeting 2 weeks from now in order to provide answers to Director Planbeck's questions.
Thank you. The answer is no.
Director Planbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen, how do you vote?
No.
Vice President Gladbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
President Martin, how do you vote?
No.
This item is tabled until the next board meeting.
President Martin?
Yes.
Could I request that in the meantime, the budget gets posted to our document library so it's available? And I did send Mr. Cole and Ms. Jacobs the link to the budget that was presented to the Water Resources Committee, where it was a PowerPoint, it wasn't a budget. But it had financial information in it.
All right. I think your request has been noted.
Thanks. I'll just point out, too, at least our write-up says that the under fiscal considerations that these costs were included in the adopted budget. So not sure if that was the question you were asking, but that is the information that staff presented in the write-up.
Well, Mr. Stone, when I read what was presented to the Water Resources Committee, it was less money than what was presented to ours. And when I looked for this information, first, the budget details were not online. And second, there was a very large amount there. So right. That's why I'm asking. That's why I wanted clarification. That's why I'd like to see the budget online.
I appreciate that. I would have loved to have answered that question before the meeting since you had it. I'll just point out again, in the write-up for this item, it says these costs were included in the adopted fiscal year 2021-22 and 22-23 budgets. We will provide the resume and bring it back next board meeting. Thank you.
And I would really appreciate if you would show where that amount is, that it's not 260, it's 270 in the budget. Thank you. Sorry to bother you about it. That's my job.
All right. Before we move on, I'd like to ask the staff to make sure that Director Planbeck gets the answers to her questions so that we can include this on the next consent calendar.
Will do.
All right. So we are on to item six, action items for approval. We have two that were removed. We are left with item 6.2, authorize the general manager to implement modifications to SCV Water's lawn replacement program. The presentation is to be made by the agency's sustainability manager, Matt Dickens, and water conservation specialist, Julia Grothy.
Correct.
But before, is that correct?
It's Growth. But I get called Grothy all the time.
Okay. I'm sorry about that. Mr. Stone, did you have any opening remarks before we move on to 6.2?
I would just say that our staff has done a nice job of working through a review of the program and discussing it with the appropriate committee that is set up by the board for oversight of water resource functions, including conservation. And is bringing forth this recommended set of revisions and improvements to the program. And we have a nice presentation, I'm sure, on that this evening.
Very good. With that, Mr. Dickens, take it away.
Thank you, President Martin. It's a pleasure to appear before the SCV Water Board of Directors tonight. Again, I'm Matt Dickens, Sustainability Manager, and tonight with Julia Groth, we will be presenting the Lawn Replacement Transformation and Proposed Implementation Plan. We have quite a bit of ground to cover, so let's get started. Next slide, please. The goal of tonight's presentation is that SCV Water Conservation staff is seeking approval from the Board of Directors to modify the existing lawn replacement program, henceforth known as LRP, and to implement supplemental pilot programs. Next slide, please. Our presentation will cover the following components: an evaluation and insight of the current lawn replacement program, the LRP evaluation overview, which I think is a gold standard in evaluation, measurement, verification of programs, existing programs, and program improvement. We'll identify a proposed implementation plan for transformation, and then again, we'll conclude with our staff recommendation. Next slide, please. With that, I'm going to pass it over to Julia to provide an overview of the current lawn replacement program.
Thanks, Matt, for the intro. So first, we'll take a look at our current lawn replacement program. Next slide, please. So before we get started, we wanted to answer the question, why do we need a lawn replacement program? Having a lawn replacement program aligns with SCV Water's strategic plan and is critical to meeting historic and future state conservation mandates. Irrigation is a significant source of water demand, and in SCV, turf grass is the predominant plant type. Water-efficient plants require 40 to 60% less water than turf grass and have other benefits, including decreased runoff, water quality benefits, and more habitat for local wildlife. Here on the slide, you can see an example of an actual LRP participant's before and after. Next slide, please. SCV Water's current lawn replacement program offers three incentives: $2 per square foot for turf conversion, 50 cents per square foot for drip conversion, and a $150 design assistance rebate. The program is only for French yards. Living grass must be in place before the start of the project. No artificial turf is allowed, and we require at least 50% plant coverage at maturity. It's important to note that our program for large landscape and CII customers is very similar, only slight requirements, but today we're going to be focusing and using the residential as an example. We offer several materials and resources for LRP customers, including the Hottest 30 Plant Guide, gardening classes, the Water Smart Workshop, and SantaCaritaGardens.com. Next slide, please. This graph shows lawn replacement program participation by year on the x-axis, shows square footage of lawn converted on the y-axis, and is broken down by number of residential projects shown in light green and non-residential projects shown in dark green, and those would be the large landscape and commercial projects. As you can see, the community really stepped up during the last drought, but since that drought ended, participation in the program under current parameters has dropped far below our yearly target of 650,000 square feet converted. Based on this data, we can see that the market is likely saturated for those early adapters, and there's a need to create a standing program that promotes participation regardless of drought conditions. Next slide, please. After identifying the need to transform the program, we worked with a consultant to do a thorough evaluation of our lawn replacement program. Next slide. In this analysis, we did an external environmental scan of seven of the most innovative and best-in-class programs from across the country, assessing their program parameters and successful resources. We also conducted a supply chain analysis through interviews with local nurseries and landscape contractors to identify challenges and opportunities to collaborate. Surveys of about 300 former LRP participant sites were done to assess the success of these water-efficient landscapes and to see cascading effects on surrounding neighbors. From that evaluation, it was found that 98% of projects are still in place, and 92% had neighbors within eyesight that had low water use designs, showing a cascading effect from our program towards more water-efficient landscaping in our community. Because this analysis was extremely robust and for the sake of time, we wanted to focus on the most critical details. So more information about the first three components that I mentioned can be found in your board packets. And I will briefly review highlights from our customer questionnaires and the recommendations outlined in the findings report. Next slide. So questionnaires were sent to three customer groups, former LRP participants, those that showed interest in the lawn replacement program but canceled their application, and non-participants who had never shown interest in the program. We received over 1,700 responses from the three groups. We were thrilled by that response rate. From these questionnaires, we found that customers had four main needs and priorities. Landscape quality or beauty and appearance was the number one priority. Landscape utility was also a main priority, with people wanting a place for children and pets to play. The surveys also revealed some challenges, including knowledge and resources. It was identified that customers need help with design, and there's still some embedded thinking that low water use landscapes means cactus and gravel. So there are educational opportunities to transform that thinking. Also, customers were concerned about the high cost of conversion. From these questionnaires, we found that 95% of customers were not aware of SCV Water's lawn replacement program, but 80% of customers said that they were interested in the program, and the majority of customers think that low water use landscapes can be beautiful. This shows that there's a huge interest and need for this program, but costs and challenges are dampening enthusiasm and preventing participation. Next slide. The Lawn Replacement Program Evaluation's final report identified these priority recommendations to consider implementing in our lawn replacement program. First would be to rebrand. So rebrand the LRP to emphasize beauty and landscape as a living space, target customers and create personalized outreach, continually engage with the customer, and provide social proof through demonstration gardens, garden tours, and customer testimonials. Second recommendation is to enhance rebates to better motivate customers and landscape contractors. So that would involve increasing the base level incentive for turf replacement, providing bonus incentives for additional sustainability features, and offering contractor direct incentives. Third, provide customers with knowledge and resources. So update and launch a new program website, provide more design assistance, and update and expand plant guides to include native plants. Lastly, form partnerships and collaborate with local landscape contractors, designers, and nurseries by integrating them into the lawn replacement program. Now I'll pass it over to Matt to review the proposed implementation plan. Next slide, please.
Thank you, Julia. And as I mentioned before, the analysis that was incorporated, the academic review, the rigor, was quite robust, having nearly 1,800 respondents, working with supply chain analysis, working with existing customers, non-participants. It really set the standard, and a very gold standard, I would say, for evaluation processes. So we're very happy and probably will at some point share that structural process with other water agencies, because I think a lot of those agencies, other agencies, partner agencies are looking for opportunities as well. So moving forward, though, I'm going to talk about the proposed implementation plan, which will look at the logic model, the phased approach, and then into supporting material resources and proposed program requirements. Next slide, please. We're very happy to share our logic model that we developed, or what others might call a theory of change. And this has five critical pillars, inputs and activities, which are SCV Water planned activities. And that, of course, ranges from the groups that would be incorporated into the program, into the process and collaborative opportunities, agency staff, and sufficient external support. We would like to note that currently this program and what the recommendations do not, we do not envision increasing the budget, but rather we would see the bar reducing from 650,000 square feet per year. But then we have our activities, and that would be to, of course, encourage customers to seek support and achieve common goals, to activities to develop evaluation, verification, and performance monitoring and management. The outputs would, as you can see, range from enacting strategic communication engagement to implementing performance management systems. Those outcomes would be stakeholder partnerships and collaboration to support market transformation, all the way down to achieving the agency's goals and state conservation mandates, of which the culmination of all of these activities would essentially improve long-term community sustainability in SCV. Next slide, please. So on our proposed implementation plan, we're looking at three different phases. The first phase is transition, the second phase is launch, and the phase three is monitoring and adapting. For phase one, we're looking to rebrand the lawn replacement program. That's new name and logo, new program parameters, updating the rebate website and workflow, expanding the plant guide, conducting a deep dive into community language and lexicon to better understand how to talk about lawn transformation projects and water conservation in general. We're looking to engage with the supply chain. Again, that's contractors, nurseries, designers, irrigation houses, to make these products, to place these products, make these products more available and easier to identify and accessible for customers to incorporate into their projects. And then compile social proof. And that, again, is developing ways and means in which community can interact with lawn transformation projects, including demonstration gardens and garden tours. Phase two would be a launch. That's a marketing push, which we envision that it should the board approve the parameters, we could start implementing the new program parameters tomorrow, although we think that we would need a little bit of time to get those collateral materials together to do that final analysis in terms of gauging public sentiment and language. So we think a hard launch would be around January, February, March timeframe. And then phase three is the monitoring and adapting. We recognize that program performance monitoring requires not only regular checking in to guarantee and to understand how performance is materializing, but also to take that performance information and use it for adaptive management practices. We continue to improve the program in order to make it sustainable. Next slide, please. So in terms of supporting materials and resources, we're looking to expand a California-friendly plant guide. We have an improved plant selection tool on our website, which we can expand, which will identify California-friendly, native, and other drought-tolerant plants. Developing garden design templates with plant lists, that's working with local designers to provide some templates, which we would work with customers for ease of use, but also work with HOAs so they have a good understanding of what types of plants are appropriate and acceptable and conform with both our requirements and then also aesthetic requirements. We have example gardens and testimonials, lists of LRP-trained landscape contractors, designers, and nurseries. Our goal here will be to develop an online training portal system that would allow contractors, designers, nurseries, and other folks to learn about the program so that when they're interacting with the public, they can understand from essentially from cradle, from soup to nuts, all the various components of the project. And in addition to that, once those contractors or whoever finished that course, we would list them on the website, not as a preferred provider, but as a service provider that is aware of the program parameters. We also want to develop a care sheet for customers with tips for their new landscapes. We do recognize that continued engagement is imperative to the success of this program. Often when landscapes are installed, they have a establishment schedule, which sometimes doesn't get pulled back. And so you might sometimes see native or drought tolerant landscape plants and other items or other shrubs that are the size of small cars. And usually you don't find that in places where they're working off of the appropriate water levels. So sometimes they get overwatered. So our goal is to continue to work with customers to make sure that they're right watered and maintained. And then we want to maintain our gardening classes, our online Water Smart Workshop, and our SantaClaritaGardens.com website. Next slide, please. Okay, so for proposed program requirements, our suggested requirements would be to allow partial lawn removal projects. That means that you would not be required to remove all of your front yard or all of your grass. Some folks like to dip their toes in the pool before jumping in. So we recognize that our customers have diverse range of preferences, and we want to be able to support those. We would allow projects to be completed in phases, meaning that as long as the full zone was completed, they could do one zone in their front yard, one zone, the other zone in their front yard, and another phase and another zone in their backyard at a later time, so that they can do it in manageable bits. We would decrease the minimum project size to 100 square feet. We have a lot of parkways in our community that are turf that are far below or below the 250 square foot minimum we currently have. So this would increase the ability for more customers to participate. The maximum project size would be 2,500 square foot per phase, which that's the current requirement, although we would allow up to 5,000 square feet per year. In total, we would allow 8 phases up to 20,000 square feet. Also, we would expand to backyard projects. So this, we currently allow front yard projects. We would now allow front and backyard. We currently require that these projects use and incorporate drip irrigation. Customers would have a choice to also have high efficiency nozzles that have low precipitation rates. However, should that customer choose that option, we would need to confirm that the smart controller and pressure regulation have been calibrated correctly so that it's watering appropriately. And then we would customers would not be able to convert the landscape back within 10 years. Maintained requirements must be living grass. We do pre and post inspections, at least 50% plant coverage at maturity. That's a little bit lower for commercial customers due to their requirements. And we still would not rebate artificial turf or include artificial turf as part of the non-living landscape palette. Next slide, please. Okay, and so in addition to our enhanced program parameters and increased incentives and resources, we recognize that there's some opportunities here to test out some smart practices with this program. That includes water retention features. Those are rain gardens, bioswales, and terracing, which we would offer 50 cents per square foot for the square foot of the feature, maximum 2,500 square feet. We would promote sheet mulching at 50 cents per square feet, again, for the area that's been that includes sheet mulching. We would allow a $50 rebate for a bee hotel and an owl box, unit one per customer. And we would promote incentives and rebates for rain barrels up to $75 each, not to exceed the actual cost, limit two per customer. Next slide, please. So in conclusion, you can see the current program side by side to the proposed program, where we're looking at increased incentives for both the dollars per square foot, cents per square foot for drip irrigation, increase in design assistance, a bonus rebate. That is that if a customer includes a majority of their plants as California native, their plant palette they install, they would get 50 cent per square foot incentive. It doesn't mean they have to. They can still choose plants that are non-native or non-California as long as they're non-invasive, but they just wouldn't be eligible for that incentive. The maximum rebate currently is the estimated savings currently is about 57%. We think these practices would increase to 69%. The maximum rebate currently is $5,900. The new proposed program has a base of $9,625. With the California native plant bonus up to $10,875. And then you can see the pros and cons for each of the different programs. Next slide, please. So again, and in conclusion, SCV Water Conservation staff is seeking approval from the board of directors to modify the existing lawn replacement program to implement supplemental pilot programs. This is very critical, again, as Julia pointed out, for why we need a turf conversion program. But timing is essential. As you know, we're currently heading into intensifying drought conditions. We think there's going to be increased participation and needs. And so we're looking to help develop a program that is sustainable, that promotes sustainability, and that whether we're in drought or not, has the propensity to achieve success in a cost-efficient and effective manner. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Matt and Julia. Before we take up board questions and discussion, Madam Secretary, are there any members of the public who wish to comment? I have two written comments I'll read once we take the verbal comments.
We do have some public comment. Hold on just a moment. Mr. Townsend, you may begin your public comment. Mr. Townsend?
Hello, can people hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay, I just wanted to applaud the board's effort in making changing the culture around landscaping by including this, including all these rebates and everything and promoting this, because it is something that's important to your mission, not only to get people to value natural resources, and a key way to get people to value water as a natural resource is to encourage, you know, the beauty that's involved in California native plants. Some of the things I wanted to mention about some of the positive things I wanted to mention was the idea that you guys were able to be more flexible with the size of the projects. To, you know, I, as someone who's converted my lawn without the rebate, it is doing it by yourself is doing a large area is a lot of work. Some of the things I wanted to say was it makes it more accessible to more lower class and people with less money. So it's a great thing. The more people you appeal to, the more it will be used. One thing I wanted to say, I know you guys want to launch this in like February or something like that, but the fall planting season for California native plants is in fall. So I'm out there digging trenches on my slope this week to put in the irrigation, and then I'm planning on buying a bunch of plants next month and sowing wildflower seed. A lot of the local chapters of the California Native Plant Society and Theodore Payne have big plant sales around this time. So maybe that was something that you guys would be able to do to make work with the nursery partners in the area to make California native and drought tolerant plant fair during this time. I really like the idea that you guys change to the high efficiency nozzles option, because a lot of the drip irrigation is difficult to install and difficult to maintain. The high efficiency, the spray nozzles are very easy to maintain and are often suggested for California natives. One of the other things I'm going to suggest is, I know you guys are all talking about turf removal, but not all grass is the same. My wife still wanted grass, and I did too as well for my son. And there are California native plants, California native grasses that are highly water efficient. I have a blue grandma lawn out right there right now. It's in a very natural state and it's very low water. And that's all my comments.
Thank you very much for your public comment. Mr. Petzold, you may begin your public comment.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity. I did just want to ask the person who gave the presentation to answer a question, whether a 1099 is this going to be issued to the people that participate in the program. I've participated in several water programs and each been notified, and I've been notified after participation that they needed my social security number to issue me a 1099 for the value of the, in my case, it was a pool cover. So if a 1099 is going to be issued, then I do believe that the person should be advised of that early in the process so they know exactly what the requirements are. And thank you very much. And that's all I had to say.
Thank you very much for your public comment. Ms. Duvold, you may begin your public comment.
Thank you very much. Actually, I just have a question. Can I ask a question?
You can.
Okay. Thank you very much for the presentation. I'm super excited about all of these rebates and the in-depth information that's coming out of them. And I was just curious, is there any consideration for individual residential and neighborhood soil rejuvenation and analysis with what you're doing? For example, the differences in terrain as it relates to native plants and water runoff consideration.
Does that complete your question?
Yes. And thank you.
Thank you. Would there be anybody who would be available to answer that question, Ms. President Martin? Is that okay if we give
staff answers? Yes, I would ask Mr. Dickens if he can respond to that. Yes.
Thank you, President Martin. It's a very good question. We did incorporate one of the benefits of the lawn replacement program, as noted in the addition in one of the early slides, is that it reduces the propensity and contribution to irrigation runoff, mainly because it utilizes either drip irrigation, which has a very slow precipitation rate, or in combination with slow high efficiency nozzles. So that allows the water, it's applied at a slower rate, so water can absorb into the soil more slowly, and therefore you reduce the propensity and the frequency of runoff. We also included rain retention and water retention features in our pilot programs as another component to supplement retention of water on folks' properties, to capture rainwater, and then also to incorporate bioswales, rain gardens, and sheet mulching, which I think in many ways would satisfy Ms. McDoodle's question.
Are there other public comments, April?
There is another public comment. I'm trying to remember, did Mr. Townsend already do a public comment?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry, Mr. Townsend, you cannot do another public comment.
Mr. President?
Yes?
Just want to make sure we address Mr. Petzold's question. Having done my taxes this year and had a 1099 from my prior water provider in Temecula, that's near and dear to my heart. So I believe the threshold is $600 or more. We have to issue a 1099. And generally what agencies do these days, now that that's become clear in the law, is they actually ask the applicant to fill out a W-9 form as part of the application process. So they would be on notice. I just want to get confirmation from Matt that that's how we would do it.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. And that is correct. We require the 1099 be filled out as part of the application process.
All right, it would be
W-9. Sorry, we do require W-9 to be submitted. However, it should be noted that the agency on numerous occasions has lobbied Congress to change this requirement in similar practice with the energy sector. So this is a requirement of the IRS, which we have to and are compelled to comply with, although we are really hoping that that legislation gets through that would treat water efficiency improvements much like energy efficiency improvements.
Thanks.
Very good. Thank you for bringing that up, Mr. Stone. Any other public comments, April?
There are not.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and read the two public comments we received in writing before the meeting in the order that they were received. The first one is from Mr. Richard Rockman, who is a graduate student at Cal State Northridge in ecology and evolution. His comment goes as follows. I'm a plant ecologist and a graduate student at Cal State Northridge. I'd like to voice my support for the lawn replacement program, especially the parts about permeable surfaces and native plants. Native plant pallets have been used all across Los Angeles to lower pesticide and water usage since they are adapted to live here and don't require much maintenance. They increase the urban biodiversity since plants and animals have evolved to coexist with them and can help pollinators like bumblebees and monarch butterflies that are currently either endangered in Los Angeles or scheduled to be on the endangered species list. Many native plants that work in urban landscapes are widely available in nurseries in LA and can be quite cost-effective. It seems like a no-brainer. I don't support the measure to include rebates for pollinator hotels. These can be breeding grounds for disease, parasites, and predators of pollinators. Because many folks don't know how to care for their bee hotel. The whole idea could do more harm than good. Xerces Society states that most pollinators are ground-dwelling anyway, so simply having permeable surfaces not only helps water recharge, but gives pollinators potential habitat as well. I think getting rid of lawns and cement, replacing those surfaces with permeable soils and rocks, as well as native plants, needs to be the primary goal. I have a few thoughts on owl boxes. Other than that, I think more folks should have them. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you, Mr. Rockman, for your comment. The second one is from Ms. Diane Troutman. Her public comment goes as follows. I just read the Water Resources and Watershed Committee recommendations to improve the LRP, and I strongly support them. The LRP is a good program, and this proposal will take it to the next level. My husband, Alan, and I participated in the LRP back in 2016. We would have put in rain barrels as part of our plan had that incentive existed at the time. I think that any and all options for water capture are important and should be part of the agency's plan to incentivize the community. In many of the reports I've read, we are very likely to have heavy rains that follow droughts, and I suspect that many customers would jump at the opportunity to make water capture part of their landscaping. For our lawn renovation, we used a designer and installer who recommended sheet mulching. Given our clay soil and in the SCV, I think it should be encouraged through the rebate program. Watching drought-tolerant and California native plants die because the soil is not receptive will not help the program gain support. In that same vein, people need to be informed that these plants take some time to fill in so they don't have unrealistic expectations. Providing a list of consultants and designers is an excellent idea, but I'm curious as to how the design incentive was priced. It could be quite expensive for a larger property that is covered in the LRP. The plan to coordinate with local nurseries can be very helpful because making people hunt down appropriate plants can be a daunting task. Encouraging the use of bee and monarch butterfly friendly plants would, I suspect, be very popular. And among the bonus rebate suggestions, owl boxes might encourage a more natural control of vermin. If you can also simultaneously educate people about the dangers of rodenticides. Clearly, the community needs to be better educated on the beauty and benefits of sustainable yards and gardens. Through rebranding the program and with the rebates and resources recommended by the committee, I think the agency will be better able to meet its goals. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. Sincerely, Diane Troutman. And that concludes the written comments. So we are now at the point where we can take questions and discussions from the board. Pardon me. I see a number of hands in the air. I will start with Director Bronstein.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Matt and Julia. That was a wonderful, wonderful presentation. It made me so happy to see how flexible and how much you went out there, looked for input, and were willing to integrate that as much as you could. I also love the little touch of having those little plants on the side with their names. I was Googling them a little bit, trying to see like where I could find them. So I love that touch. That was really, really nice. My question is, aside from the fact that, yes, I love it, is more about, is there a way or a thought about how to integrate also just regular local gardeners into this program and to bring them in, since they are probably, I would say, like first responders, right, to our gardens? Is there a way to, you know, get them in, get them, help them get the tools that they need to help educate their day-to-day customers? That's it.
You're muted, President Martin.
Go ahead and respond to Director Bronstein, if you can.
Sure. Thank you, Director Bronstein. It's a great question. We totally recognize and fully recognize that the supply chain and the industry support is critical to not only transforming to sustainable gardens, but maintaining them. We have had some initial discussions about holding fairs. I think somebody mentioned a fair recently. We were looking at gardener fairs I think you and I have spoken previously about the Amigos del Agua, which is a outreach engagement with a lot of our local landscape maintenance folks. And I think you're right. We need to improve that outreach and incorporate that outreach into our practice.
I also just want to say that I think that this is an excellent way that we can give back to our customers who are, we're basically helping them help us, helping them. So I just see this as a win-win situation. So thank you very much again. This was really great.
Very good. Thank you, Director Bronstein. Director Kelly, you have a question.
I have three questions and a comment. So I guess the first question is on the referrals. I'm assuming that when we're doing the referrals, we are referring them to licensed contractors that are licensed to the contractors board. We have a lot of risk with paying people to do things in the yard and getting somebody to maintain it. I did fight for a program many years ago to try to get gardeners aboard an education program so they could be certified, through the agency and through the city to do certain things. But we have no guarantees that they're going to maintain it. So as much as I appreciate the thought, I just want to make sure that if we are going to be referring, that right now your train of thought is licensed contractors. The second subject is on the 10-year convert back. Have you had discussion on what happens if somebody sells their property? And is there any carryover to the new owners, or is it just dying there and the new owners have to start the process over again? And then the third situation is, this is residential only, is that correct? So if you can touch base on each of those, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Director Kelly. Regarding the first question, we would ask that the to be listed on the website of a service provider, they would need to have a business license, and they would have to have taken the course that fully explains all the various parameters of our program. And again, we would state on the website that this is not an agency preferred customer. This is just a customer that provides these services and has taken the training, and here's their information. So there's a little bit of opportunity there to get your name onto the service provider list. Regarding the second question, we do not have the easement capability. There are programs out there that have developed conservation easements. That is, that once a program or once a customer converts lawn, there's an easement placed on that property, and that is in perpetuity. This program, we do not have an easement. Therefore, if there's a transfer of ownership, that owner certainly could change the landscape. But what we have found is that it's just not the case in many. We don't see that frequently. And then the third question on for commercial customers, there would be increased rebates for commercial customers as well. We focus on the residential because there's a lot more nuance to the residential programs than there are to the commercial, but commercial customers would also be eligible for $3 per square foot for converting turf to drought tolerant landscape. There would be a native bonus. It wouldn't be as high. It would be about half as much. They could use high efficiency irrigation nozzles and so on and so forth. So I hope that answers your questions.
It does. And when we did a commercial program last time, it took up a large portion of the budget. So I would just like to hope that this gets into the residential homeowners' hands, as much as possible, even though there is obviously a lot of value in the large landscape on commercial properties. I'd like to see more homes get the attention. Thank you very much for your answers.
Very good. We'll take questions this time from Director Armitage, please.
Thank you. I guess I have more comments than questions. You probably already know, I'm super excited to see this expansion of the lawn replacement program. I think it's going to inspire more customers to make the modifications to their landscaping, including myself. That's going to hopefully get us to save more water and also help our ecosystem. So I'm really thrilled to see native plants get the attention that I think they deserve. And I think the added flexibility that you're adding to this is going to really help attract more people. In terms of the bee hotel, my family will tell you that I have an abnormal love for bees. I am all about doing whatever we can to help them thrive since they are such a critical component to our ecosystems. So I first want to say that I very much appreciate the thought that was given into including bee hotels into the pilot, since, you know, bees are pollinators, and then pollinators help propagate more plants, which help stabilize our soil and make our soils healthier, which then help us filter our groundwater into our groundwater system. So there is a connection between them and our water quality. And I want to make sure people understand that. However, now it partially pains me to be conflicted about it, given the input that we got from Mr. Rockman as an ecologist. So I don't know which way I necessarily want to go with this. What I would say perhaps is if we keep it, maybe we could be really diligent about the education that we're giving to our customers on how to properly maintain their bee hotels if we decide to go that way. But I would also be okay with if we choose to instead really focus, laser focus our attention at being better proponents of native plants, and perhaps taking the time to establish relationships and building strong relationships with organizations like the Theodore Payne Foundation and the California Native Plant Society. I think there's a lot of room to establish relationships with them. I just saw last week Las Virgenes Water put out on their social media to their customers, hey, we're going to do a mass order of native plants. Contact us, let us know what you want. We'll get it for you and we'll get it to you. So I thought that was amazing. So if maybe we can do some types of programs like that too, that I think that would be really great. The owl boxes. I love the idea of the owl boxes, you know, giving these beautiful raptors more places to nest so that they can help to naturally control our pest populations without the need for harmful chemical rodenticides is wonderful. And I know many people immediately around me who would be very happy to have them get rid of their gophers who are destroying their landscapes. So, you know, if people are going to take the time and the money to put in new landscaping, but then the gophers are eating it up, I think the owls would be a great way to help control that. So I like seeing that in there. So thank you. Rain barrels. I think the demand for the rain barrels will surprise us, because I was kind of watching when the city of Santa Clarita was doing their distribution program a few months back. They put out a post on social media saying we have rain barrels. And I thought, you know what? I'm not sure people are really going to be that interested. They went so fast that I think they're doing another round coming up really soon. So I think we might be surprised at how many people take advantage of that. And then interestingly, I'm hearing more and more, and I know you guys talked about this in committee, people are hooking up their air conditioning condensation lines into their rain barrels and getting quite a significant amount of water to use in their garden. So I think we all need to keep that in mind as well. So just want to wrap up by saying thank you very much. It looks like a lot of work went into this. I'm super thankful for that. I'm hopeful that people are going to start taking advantage of this more, and hopefully we see our numbers rise. And I think it's going to be a good thing all around. So thank you.
Thank you, Director Armitage. I'll move over to Director Colley. You have your hand up.
Yeah, I thank you. So I have a couple of questions and comments. With the real quick question, owl boxes, I have no idea how these things work, but are pigeons going to move into this owl box, or will they really honestly have owls living in them? That's my first question. Matt, do you have any information on that?
I'm going to pass that over, Director Colley. I'm going to pass that question over to Julia, who has quite. She's got all the buzz on both the bee boxes and the knowledge on the owl boxes. So, Julia, take it away.
Pardon the pun.
Great. So, for the owl boxes, so there are actually 7 species of owls that live in Santa Clarita. And the owl boxes provide a safe nesting place for those owls, specifically barn owls and screech owls. And the reason why they use boxes is because those species normally nest in the cavities of trees, but with habitat loss, there are fewer trees to nest in. And so the idea behind the owl box is to provide a space for those natural predators whose main diet is rodents, to have a place to stay, to be a natural form of pest control. So we don't need to use those pesticides and rodenticides. In terms of other species moving into the owl boxes, that is always a possibility, perhaps with some maintenance by the individual who owns it, to, if there's anything undesirable, to clear it out, then that's definitely, it's definitely a possibility, but it's something that can be maintained and controlled.
All right, that's kind of a concern that, and different commenters have commented on the need for maintenance on these things, whether it be a bee hotel and now the owl hotel. I agree, it'd be really cool to have this owl living out in my front yard. But in fact, I've got pigeons that live in my front yard. And I just assume the pigeons leave, and I wouldn't want to provide them a home. And I also am not real personally eager to be evicting them. I would rather not create a habitat for them to begin with. So that's a concern. I want to make a comment. First, I'm overall pretty supportive, as you know, of these revisions. But one of the things that occurs to me is that ideally, an individual homeowner would change out their lawn and participate in a program like this, or just change out to California Native in the fall of a year where we're going to have torrential rains, and the time that it takes for these things to get rooted and whatnot, as was mentioned in the presentation, you actually require more water in the beginning than you would for the grass that's being replaced. My thought or concern is that what happens in February or March when this next water year, if it proves to be yet again an extreme drought in California, and we need to move to, I forget, stage four or something on our water shortage contingency plan, and we're telling folks to you need to stop watering or water only twice a week or worse. And at the same time, we're encouraging people to plant new plants that require a great deal of water to take root and to take off. It seems to me that we're setting up the potential for quite a conflict. And so my question, Matt, I guess, is have we thought that through, and can we be flexible on our hard launch and our the timing of our encouraging the public, our public, the publication of all this information, to make sure that we're not creating ourselves a larger problem than we are solving, at least in the short term. Have we thought that through?
Director Cawley, thank you for the question. And as a amateur policy wonk, yes, we thought this through quite a bit. I don't remember exactly what stage. We do have a stage in the water shortage contingency plan where no new projects, we discontinue the program because we recognize that at that level, we have an issue. During the establishment period of these plants, while they do require more water than their normal use, it is still less water than what turf requires. So in a sense, there's still water savings. And then thirdly, we put provisions in the ordinance that customers who use drip irrigation and high efficiency and or high efficiency nozzles that have a precip rate less than 1 inch per hour would be able to water a little bit more frequently, because it takes a little bit longer for that amount of water, the right amount of water, to be applied to the landscape. So I think we thought it through really well, and we do recognize that, that we could push up against some contingencies where we'd have to discontinue the program. But I think that we set ourselves up in a very successful flight pattern, if you will. The other question I think you asked was pertaining to the flexibility. Absolutely. If we find that we're getting through this water year and things don't materialize, I think we'll have a different set of facts that we're going to have to incorporate into our decision-making process, in which case, certainly, as the program currently stands, we would, you know, because it's a current standing program, we would have to discontinue the standing program or discontinue the new version of the program. Either way, that's a ceteris paribus an issue. So In my thinking, I think that if the issue is progressing, intensifying as it is, getting in early with this program is going to pay dividends in the long term.
All right. I appreciate that. I appreciate the fact you thought that through because I would not want to create ourselves larger problems than we can be solved. And so my final comment is going to relate to the rain barrels. We discussed the rain barrels quite a bit in committee. I think anybody would generally agree that the amount of rainwater that one is able to collect in the Santa Clarita Valley from a rain barrel is essentially negligible. Very, very little water actually would be collected because we don't have very many rain events. And even in a day or week or whatever that you have a substantial amount of rain, those events are infrequent. The 55 gallon drum would fill up and then overflow. And you would need 100 rain barrels to capture all the water that you might want to capture. But one or two rain barrels really isn't going to do anything. And it occurs to me that for mankind to harvest the oil and produce 15, 20 pounds of plastic in order to capture over the life of that plastic a few thousand gallons of water is really just not serving mankind at all. And while it may look good and sound good, I'd rather us promote things which really are good and not just eyewash, if you will. So I'm really very much not in favor of the rain barrels. And as far as the bee hotels and owl boxes, I'd really like that program to be very small to begin with, and so we get some history and see if we're actually doing some good rather than rolling out, you know, here's a free owl box, put it in, right? Just I think that we're going to have all kinds of pigeons moving in because the average homeowner is going to put it up and do nothing more. And once it's inhabited by pigeons, my guess, I'm way outside of my educational expertise, but I can imagine that the pigeons would win. So I'd rather that at least those parts of the program be very, very small to begin with. Thank you.
Matt Dickens, did you have any response to Director Colley's questions? Or if you don't, we can move on to the next director.
No, I would just point out that Director Colley certainly makes good points in terms of when rainfall occurs and how much it occurs and the relationship to plant use. A 1,250 square foot roof can collect about 14,000 gallons of rainwater per year. That's a lot of 50 gallon barrels being filled up. However, that coupled with other smart rainwater retention features starts to create a portfolio approach of rain capture and success and application. The other point, I think, which is a really good point on in terms of the oil and, you know, production of rain barrels, we have been working with different vendors, and some research we've discovered is a lot of vendors reuse food shipping containers that can't be repurposed and are usually sent to the landfill. So those, they can't be repurposed for shipping food. So instead, this firm takes those food shipping barrels and converts them to rainwater catchment systems, rain barrels. So it's actually taking out and repurposing and recycling, which is, again, in theme of the sustainable landscapes and sustainable practices. So, but certainly those are good points. And thank you, Director Colley, for pointing those out.
Yeah. So if we're going to have a policy that requires that sort of thing, it may change my thinking some, but I haven't seen that in the policy. So as it stands, just a rain barrel that anybody produces, generally, incidentally, recycled things generally cost more because there's a lot of effort in getting the recyclable commonly. So I just, as it stands right now, I'm not really very supportive of those. And you mentioned how many gallons of water flow off of that roof per year. Again, if a substantial part of that it comes only in 5 days a year, I'm going to collect 200 gallons out of whatever you said, 14,000, which, you know, because I only have one or two rain barrels. So, thanks.
All right. I'd like to go to Director Planbeck. Go ahead, Lynn.
Okay, just to respond really quickly to Director Colley, I love that he's concerned about using the recycled plastic, and I hope we could put that into a requirement that we do use recycled plastic rain barrels. I have had a rain barrel in my backyard for probably 7 years. I run my rain gutters into the rain barrel, and then I have a spigot on the end of the rain barrel. So when it rains hard, I put a hose on the end and I water landscaping that's under the roof eaves that would not normally get landscaping from the rain barrel. And then when it slows down, then I fill the rain barrel up so I have a little bit left over. And it is a recycled barrel from a use that was, they're no longer using it. So I just repurposed it. So all of that could be done and we could be so sustainable. It'd be really cool. But I want to thank Matt and Julia. What an excellent presentation. And like Director Bronstein, it just made me smile. I think it's making all of us smile. We would so much like to get some natives back to our environment and create habitat, which maybe is the only way these guys are going to get it now since we go around destroying so much of it. This is a way to do it that will both help the community and help habitat and help us save water as well. I also want to thank all the public that took the effort to either write a letter or make a comment. We had excellent comments. I think they were really helpful in understanding things. I am so appreciative of someone with expertise that would give their time to inform us on these issues. I do also want to say about the owl boxes. Normally, I'm not an ornithologist, but what I understand about bird boxes and owl boxes is the holes are a certain size, and the bird, the hole is the wrong size, they don't want to nest there. So the size of the box and the size of the hole really is a lot, direction in what kind of a bird you're going to get. So that's maybe a helpful answer to Mr. Colley. I also just wanted to say that I saw that we are doing drought tolerant, and we had that booklet with 30 flowers in it. A lot of those are not native. And I just want to say that it's really, I think, important to develop a booklet that's native for this area. The reason being that when we substitute out native plants and use drought tolerant that comes from elsewhere, the native pollinators and the native birds cannot use those plants because they are dependent on what's growing here. So it's really important to encourage people to use natives rather than just drought tolerant. And if some kind of handout could be developed to have people understand its importance. I mean, it seems like people, particularly birds, people love birds. One of the ways you could probably talk people into doing this changeover in their garden is by telling them that they're going to have more birds and they're going to have more butterflies. People are, you know, this is really being promoted in the environmental community. So there's really a rising awareness of it. And I think the very fact that the water agency would be encouraging it as well would show favorably on the water agency's PR. I think people will really appreciate that you're doing that. So that would be my only thing, is to see if we could get into the program about having the recycled barrels. That was an excellent comment by Director Polly. And also to make sure that we are accenting natives rather than just drought tolerant, and maybe giving some kind of handout about why natives are important and how they help the whole birds and insect populations, pollinators particularly. Thank you, and thank you all for doing this. I'm very excited about it.
Thank you, Director Planbeck. I'm going to go in the order that I saw the hands come up, and I think next is Director Atkins. Go ahead, BJ.
Thank you. I too have had rain barrels at my home for probably more than 10 years, and I was proud of Mr. Colley for recommending recycled barrels. And my personal experience is every time I went to the rain barrel, there was always water in it. So it was refilling from dew. Or now, in fairness, I had 48 solar panels, so maybe that sheds dew more than the composition single roof I had. But my experience with rain barrels is they do, in fact, collect water, and it is usable, and it's miraculously refills on a regular basis. At least that's been my experience. I want to ask primarily Julia and Matt, how is this the first you've heard of this potential conflict with the Bee Hotel, and how would you propose to resolve that, the issue brought by the graduate student at CSUN?
Julia, I'll shoot first, and then if you want to, I'll respond first, and if you want to note the buzz pollination, I think that'd be grateful, very helpful. I believe it or not, I did research too. I went and said, bee hotels, what are these things? Are they really helpful? Are they beneficial? And there's quite a bit of academic literature out there. And surprisingly, it is conflicting, as often academic literature can be. And so our thinking is that in our care guide, because we're trying, again, to promote the holistic sustainability component, and recognize the value of native plants and native pollinators, bee hotels can provide a safe breeding territory for solitary bees, which are most native bees are here. So we tend to think that with smart practice, communication and care information in the packet and continued engagement, we see that they do attract local pollinators. Now, whether or not those are all local native bees, that the research again is somewhat, conflicting. But to that, I think that Julia had some recent research that is really important to note about the benefit of native bees.
Yeah, absolutely. So like, as Matt mentioned, unlike European honeybees, which are the predominant species of bee we see out here, which are not native, many of our native species are solitary, and they do not swarm or form hives. Native plants and many other food crops, for example, tomatoes, blueberries, and almonds, require something called buzz pollination to be pollinated, which many native species do, but European honeybees do not. So this has to do with the shape of the flower, and many native plants cannot be pollinized without buzz pollination. So buzz pollination involves a bee It'll land on the flower, it'll quickly shake or vibrate its body, and the pollen will shoot out of the flower and cover the bee, which it could then pass on to the next flower. So our reason behind this is because we're trying to promote using more native plants, using bee hotels would provide habitat for their native pollinators, which are essential for the health of those plants. And it's also in line with our goals. Bees and other pollinators in the garden contribute to beautiful, flourishing, thriving, colorful landscapes.
Thank you, Julia. I would be remiss if I did not say thank you so much for the fine research and the beautiful presentation. It was really well done. Both of you, thank you.
Thank you, Director.
All right, before I go to the next commenter, I wanted to ask if we can be as brief as possible, ask what you need to ask, that information you need to be able to vote on the item. We've got a long agenda ahead of us tonight, and I would really like to move this along. So I'll take the next one, which was Vice President Martinson.
Good evening, and thank you both, Matt and Julia. Obviously, a great deal of time has gone into this. I first wanted to start out with a question. Do we still have an ET controller rebate program in place?
Yes.
Okay, because I've been asked about that, and I've recommended that to several people. I was hoping I was on track with that. To some extent, this strikes me as a Chris Elm question with regard to whether or not it's cost-effective. There needs to be some kind of a cost-benefit analysis on a big expense, big-ticket item like this. I'm really trying to understand the economics here. The goal, as I understand it, is to save water. Is that right? Save water primarily is our goal. So I don't understand, I guess, why we restrict it. I mean, it would seem like the large estate homes are the low-hanging fruit. That's where we're going to save massive amounts of water. And there's one application process. You know, it's more efficient from a staff level. And so this 2,500 square foot limitation doesn't strike me as being effective at our goal. The other... And I think the rain barrel thing, I don't know. I don't think it makes is going to make any kind of a difference in our water supply or our water availability. So I guess I'll defer to others, but it doesn't strike me. It strikes me as feel good policy rather than real water savings. The 10 by 10 lots, we're going to have staff. Is that in any way effective to have staff go through an application process and 10 years of follow-up on a 10 by 10 lot? That just seems like way outside the scope of actual water savings. And again, more like feel-good policy than real making any kind of economic sense for our ratepayers. So I would think we should bump that up significantly if we're going to have our staff go all the way through the application process and sending 1099s and getting W-9s and checking on them for 10 years. Let's save some real water. So those are my comments. Again, I appreciate that you took all the time you did on this.
Thank you, Vice President Martinson. Director Kelly, go ahead with your comment or question.
Yeah, I'll make it real fast. First of all, I think every resident is going to have a different need and they're not going to take advantage of everything that we're going to have to offer. So kind of having that selection for them to choose from, I think, is good. Second, I think the owl is a little bit bigger than the pigeon, and the owl might win if he wants the box. And the third thing is, you know, I actually read about owls many years ago, and we put a couple of the owl boxes at our place, which is a little bit more country. But for 3 years, we had virtually no gophers. So the squirrel population went down 80%.
And I guess at the end of the 3 years, the owls were full because they left and the squirrels came back. So now you're going to have to keep feeding them something. But just a comment that the owl boxes do really work. Thank you.
Director Ford, please.
Yes, I wanted to say that some of these items that people have questions about, the birds, the bee boxes, and so on, are part of the pilot program. I think staff did a good job in putting those things into something that we'd probably report back to the board and let us know how those things are going, whereas the more substantive parts of the program represent a really big step up. In terms of the incentives to the homeowners to get rid of turf. And with that, I just wanted to say that Matt and Julia did an outstanding job, and we in Water Resources had the pleasure of hearing them present not once but twice on this particular item. And it was the recommendation of the committee to move the item forward to the board for approval. And so therefore, I would move approval of the item. Thank you.
I will second that recommendation.
Very good. Director Thank Cooper. You, Director Ford and Director Cooper. Director Armitage, I hope you have some closing remarks here.
Yeah, it's really quick. And first of all, if I could put a third motion on there, I would put a third because I'm so excited. Just really quickly, I just wanted to mention in response to something somebody had said, I don't remember who, but Professor Jeannie Chari at COC, she just got some grant funding for bee-related research, native bee-related research. So I'm wondering if perhaps we could reach out to her and see if there's any interest in collaborating on data collection for this. That would be valuable to us to kind of reevaluate in a couple years with how we want to go forward, if we want to go forward. So I just wanted to throw that out. Thank you.
Thank you.
Director Collins.
Yeah, can I ask a question? The term pilot, how does pilot differ from the full program as far as the public's ability to participate? Can I get clarification on that?
Matt?
Sure. So, you know, a pilot program is in essence a test program to test out the parameters, and it has increased frequency of analysis to determine the effectiveness of it. So what we're essentially saying here is that, like the comment was made before, here's the standing provisions of the program that we'll still report performance on, but they're standing and they would certainly be modified. The pilot program, we would want to report back with once we have some data that we can utilize and report on and interpret to determine whether or not it's effective. And if it's ineffective, then we just simply discontinue it. If we want to adapt and move it into a standing program, then that require action by the board.
So just to be clear, staff, if proving a pilot program, staff can modulate that program on its own without further board input, whereas the standing components would require board input in order to change. Is that your understanding of the difference?
Certainly, I think to become a standing program, we would want board action for that approval, but we would want to inform the committee and the board to the facts either way. Although our recommendation, if the pilot program is ineffective and is not either, you know, it's ineffective and it's not efficient, then we would not either want to modify it or abandon it.
That answer a question, Director Collins?
Yeah, I still kind of don't understand the difference between if it takes board action to change either one. I'm not sure what pilot then really means, other than maybe increased tracking. But I would hope that the pilot program is not only tracked maybe harder, but that staff would have the ability to cut the program independent of some board action if it's not working.
I see Matt nodding his head yes. So let's move this along. Director Ozahowski, you had your hand up. Do you still have something to say, or you've changed your mind?
Just a quick question, Mr. Dickens and Ms. Groth. Did we get any feedback or blessing from LA County Vector Control, a district, for the water barrels, rain barrels?
Thank you, Director Ozahowski. Yes, we do have smart practices for implementation of rain barrels from Vector Control. And then there are certified LA County vector control type rain barrels that we have been in communication with specific vendors. So there was for quite a while a standing practice to kind of exclude them altogether, but that has been changing with the introduction of smart practice and incorporation, as well as contained systems that cannot breed those pests.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Dickens. Back to you, President Martin.
Very good. I'd like to call for the vote, but before I do so, I'd like to thank Matt and Julia for the presentations. Excellent, and I learned a lot. And I see Director Colley has his hand back up again, so I guess we're waiting to go through one more set of questions before we can call. Go ahead, Director Colley. Well,
I just want a clarification on the motion, because there was discussion of including a requirement that the rain barrel be recycled. And I'm not sure if that was part of the motion. And then this latest question of whether or not it would be a rain barrel that has vector control built in. So I just want to know if those are part of the motion or not.
Director Ford made the original motion. So I would ask, do you want to add those provisions to your motion?
I will amend the motion to add those items.
Very good. Director Colley, you'll second that. I mean, Director Cooper, you'll second that. All right, so we do have a motion and a second on the floor. Hopefully there's no further discussion. Madam Secretary, please call the vote.
Director Ozahowski, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Armitage, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Cooper, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Bronstein, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Atkins, how do you vote?
Yes, thank you.
Director Colley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Planbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Kelly, I almost forgot you. How do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Gladbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
President Martin, how do you vote?
Yes.
This item passes with that addition.
Thank you very much. And with that, we're going to go.
President Martin, do you mind if we, I do have a correction to item 5.2.
Yes, I was going to say you're going to make an announcement. Go ahead.
I am. Yes, we, so item 5.2 did not pass. The vote was a tie 6-6. I'll read out those votes real quick. Director Ford voted no, and this is to table the item. Director Ford voted no. Director Planbeck voted yes. Director Bronstein voted yes. Director Atkins voted no. Director Ozahowski voted no. Director Cooper voted no. Director Colley voted yes. Director Kelly voted yes. Director Armitage voted yes. Vice President Gladbeck voted yes. Vice President Mortensen voted no. And President Martin voted no. This was a tie. So this item did not pass, which brings us back to the original motion, which was to approve a professional service agreement with Chris Helm for water resources strategic planning services through fiscal year 2022 through 2023 for a maximum amount not to exceed $270,000. I understand the other item was being discussed that staff has gathered some additional information. And before we move forward with the motion we have on the floor, would staff like to address the board?
But that was a motion to table.
It was a motion to table, but it did not pass. It was a tie of 6-6. It did not pass.
And I can jump in, President Martin. And I apologize. I had thought it was 7 and it was 6. And given that we have 12 people on the board, in order for something to pass, it needs to have 7 votes. So that was a mistake on our part. And what it does, like April explained, it just goes back to the previous motion that was on the board.
So as I understand that staff may have some additional information which could possibly address the questions that were raised by Director Planbeck. Is that correct?
Correct. We had started trying to work on that once the mistake on the count was realized. We thought we might as well share what we have so far in an effort to show good faith towards the concerns that were raised. So, Steve, would you like to try to address the two issues, the budget issue and the qualifications issue?
Sure. I can run through those real quickly for you. Director Plumbeck, thank you for sending the presentation so that we, you know, staff could take a look at it. And I think I'm seeing the slide that you're referencing on the amount of budget at $260,000. I think the confusion lies in that that's an annual budget, and this proposed contractual arrangement would span over two fiscal years. So that annual budget is actually $260,000 per year.
I didn't read it that way. It was two columns. One was 2022, and the other was 2023. I'll look at it again.
Yeah, those are individual fiscal years. So they're different fiscal years. So we operate on a fiscal basis. So the budget.
Yeah, that wasn't the way I read it, but whatever.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to provide that clarification. That's what I was reading as the confusion on that. So that the budget covers that amount. In regards to the resume, I was able to track down the resume copy that we have. I'd be happy to read some of that to the board if that is helpful, and happy to send the copy around to the full board as well. But I can read through just a few of the items on his resume so you understand a little bit more on qualifications. I'll start with career summary. Mr. Helm is a senior water resources consultant with more than 40 years experience. Mr. Helm has extensive management experience in water operations, water recycling, and desalinization, and a proven record in policy development, economic and financial analysis, strategic planning. Mr. Helm's recent practice includes providing strategic assistance for local water resources development projects. He has unique experience in the negotiation of water service contracts between public agencies and between public agencies and private entities. He has negotiated and analyzed water rights transfers in the Central, West Coast, Chino, and Maine San Gabriel basins. Mr. Helm worked 10 years at the Metropolitan Water District, serving as groundwater resources specialist. Upon his departure in 1992, Mr. Helm was the manager of planning and operations at West Basin Municipal Water District from 92 to 97. And then Mr. Helm has been a private consultant since 1997. Just a couple of the relevant experiences that are listed on his resume, the Los Angeles River Master Plan, working for Los Angeles County Department of Public Works. Mr. Helm provided concepts for optimization of river flows for beneficial uses, including potential future uses for environmental purposes and groundwater recharge. Mr. Helm assisted with outreach to regional water agencies, performed economic and financial evaluations, and reviewed technical work prepared by the consultant team. Groundwater development strategy for Central and West Coast basins, engaged with the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. Mr. Helm is presently developing strategies for the development of production and recharge capabilities within the Central West Coast basins and the Hollywood and Santa Monica groundwater basins. Mr. Helm represented City of Los Angeles' interests in the Water Replenishment District Master Plan. Mr. Helm developed scenarios for basis development and institutional structures for cooperative projects amongst parties. Just a couple more here. Groundwater Development and Augmentation Plan, again, engaged with the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. Mr. Helm prepared white papers regarding strategic direction of the development of additional water supplies, and acted as a senior reviewer of work prepared by the consulting team. Mr. Helm worked closely with LADWP staff in stakeholder engagement and evaluation alternatives. Maybe just one more here. Recycled water development negotiations. Again, with the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, Mr. Helm has provided long-term support for LADWP's negotiation of recycled water service agreements, including service to industrial customers. Mr. Helm served on the LADWP negotiating team for these agreements and for multiple agreements with West Basin Municipal Water District for the supply and return of recycled water. And I think I'll stop there. I'm happy to read through others if that's the pleasure of the board, but wanted to give you a little bit of flavor of Mr. Helm's experience and help you with your deliberations. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. I trust this addresses your concerns, Director Feinbach. Director Cooper, you wanted to say something.
You know, I recognize the need that staff has for this assistance in the planning efforts that we're doing. And I can't think of anybody any better than Chris Helm. He really is an extremely bright person. So with that, I would move adoption of item 5.2.
Director Cooper, we already do have a motion and a second for this item for 5.2 that we would have to vote on.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was motioned by Director Ford and seconded by Director Atkins.
So we do have a motion, a second on the floor. Hopefully there's no further discussion necessary. We can call for the vote. Madam Secretary.
Director Armitage, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Osuchowski, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Cooper, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Colley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Planbeck, how do you vote?
Yes, I don't see what he knows about sustainable watershed, but I hope that you will encourage him to work on those issues.
Director Bronstein, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Atkins, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Kelly, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Gladbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen, how do you vote?
Yes.
President Martin, how do you vote?
Yes.
This item passes. Thank you.
And thank you, staff, for taking the time, especially Mr. Cole, for going back and digging out the information that addressed Director Planbeck's concerns. I think that worked out well in the end. So with that, we can move on to item 7, which is our presentation on the Devil's Den Water District overview. And the presentation tonight is by Water Resource Planner Rick Vassilopoulos. I hope I said it right, Rick. If I didn't, please excuse me. So, Rick, take it away.
All right. Can you hear me? For some reason, it will not let me start my video, but I should be able to share my screen.
I can hear you.
Okay. And I don't know why it's not letting me do my video. I apologize. Again, thank you, President Martin. And yes, thanks for the perfect pronunciation of my name. And good evening, directors. My name is Rick Vassilopoulos, and I am a water resources planner here at SCV Water. I'm here tonight to give an overview of our Devil's Den property. I'll start with a short historical timeline of the property, then move on to a quick video showing how we get to Devil's Den and some state water project facilities that are along the way. I will then move on to show just how much property we own up there and how the district is governed. Finally, I will discuss how the property is managed and the current activities going on. So in 1930, irrigated farming began at Devil's Den with the first wells were drilled and barley was planted. In 1957, the Producers Cotton Oil Company bought Devil's Den Ranch, which at the time was about 9,400 acres between King and Kearns County. In 1965, the Devil's Den Water District was formed, and they secured 12,700 acre feet of ag water from the State Water Project. In 1970, deliveries began through the California Aqueducts Coastal Branch. Then between 1984 and 1987, CLWA at the time was holding discussions with producers to purchase Devil's Den for their Table A water supply. Originally, producers was asking about $3,000 an acre with an implied permanent water transfer price of $2,300 an acre foot, which was way too expensive at the time. Then with things being as they were in 1987 up there, with the farming industry kind of going downhill, CLWA got the price down to $5 million for roughly 90% of the Devil's Den Water District, which was about 1/6 the price of the 1984 offer, or roughly $400 an acre foot. The land was transferred in October of 1988 with the State Water Project contract amendments finalized a few days later. The State Water Project Table A water officially was transferred to CLWA for our use in 1991. Now I'll take you on a little aerial trip up to Devil's Den. We started the main office and head west and north up to Castaic Lake. I apologize, I had music to this and it does not work. A lot of snafus on this today for some reason. So we head up the five. I think everyone kind of knows where Castaic Lake is at least. So Castaic Lake has a maximum capacity of 320,000 acre feet, but it is currently at only 91,000 acre feet. The lake is also the terminus of the west branch of the California Aqueduct. It's filled by this blue line here, which is the Angeles Tunnel, a 30-foot diameter pipe extending from Pyramid Lake. Pyramid Lake's capacity is 180,000 acre feet and is virtually full right now. When we come to the Warney Power Plant, which comes down and generates power from the 725-foot drop through the Peace Valley Pipeline after leaving Quail Lake. Quail Lake was originally created by movement in the San Andreas Fault and enlarged by the State Water Project. It is filled by the first major pumping structure on the West Branch, the Oso Pumping Plant. From there, we head over the Tehachapis to the Edmundston Power Plant, which is the State Water Project's largest lift of nearly 2,000 feet. To accomplish this, the plant contains 14 80,000 horsepower pumps. As we proceed towards Bakersfield, we proceed to the Valley String Pumping Plants of Chrisman and Wheeler Ridge, which you can kind of see from the elevations there that we need to pump over two different ridges. And then it runs through the farms of Bakersfield. This is where music would have helped. And I sped up the video a little bit to defer that. So once we turn the corner here, we'll come up to the last pump station off this line, going up to us or down to us in the Buena Vista pumping plant. As we continue north up the California Aqueduct, we see the Buena Vista Water District and the location of our Rosedale banking program, where we currently store 87,000 acre feet of water. Both of these areas store high flow Kern River right water, and our transfer agreement with Buena Vista brings us 11,000 acre feet per year. In the same area, we also have our semi-tropic banking program, with which we have 38,000 acre feet stored currently and 5,000 acre feet a year available to SDV Water As we keep going, the whitish line going through the blue and the orange is I-5. And it kind of comes into the California Aqueduct slightly. And as we get a little bit further up here, we come to the coastal branch of the California Aqueduct and the Las Piedras pumping plant, which pumps water down to our Devil's Den Reach. It also passes through the Badger Hill pumping plant. And then this is our Devil's Den Water District. And as you can see, the coastal branch extends beyond there and goes over the mountains down there and over to Santa Barbara. So these are just a few pictures of what Devil's Den looks like. The map shows Devil's Den Water District 140 miles northwest of Santa Clarita. When the farmer at Devil's Den has access to state water project water, he uses flood irrigation techniques to irrigate his crops. When he does not have the water, he uses some of the 40 irrigation wells located on the property. All the photos here also show some soil preparation activity, the empty State Water Project aqueduct from when they were repairing it, and some of the 270 cattle which currently occupy the property. As for the property itself, Santa Clarita Valley Water owns approximately 90% of Devil's Den Water District, or about 7,800 acres, and it's shown here in green. We also own 128 of the 153 parcels within Devil's Den, as well as an additional 827 acres of adjacent property shown in blue. We also leased two parcels shown in yellow for a nominal amount. I think the total is about $1,500 a year to lease 100 acres. And the orange areas are the parcels that are owned by other owners, but inside the Devil's Den Water District. So let me get to the Devil's Den Water District governance. It is considered a land-based district, but when it was originally formed, the board of directors of the district was made up of the producers, cotton, oil executives. Producers then transferred title to some of the plots of land on the ranch to its employees and named them to the board of directors. Other landowners within the Devil's Den Water District boundary are currently allowed to run for office and are notified of elections, which occur every 2 years, by physically posting notices on the property. We do not contact other landowners directly, as we do not have any contact information on most, and no one lives on any of the properties. Also, no landowner has ever asked since 1988, has never asked to run. Since SCV Water owns 90% of the district, SCV Water's Board of Directors appoints members to the Devil's Den Water District Board of Directors if no other landowners decided to run for office. The current Board of Directors and staff of the Devil's Den Water District are listed in green here. Then we get to the property management of Devil's Den. The property is currently being actively managed by our tenant farmer at Rolling Hills Farms. The property is leased to and maintained by Rolling Hills Farms. The current agreement that we have with them ends at the end of this year. The tenant does not pay any monetary rent, but provides weed control and maintenance of all structures. The weed control is as per the 1988 EIR mitigation measure, basically one of the only mitigation measures in the EIR when we purchased the property. The other mitigation measure included continuation of an acceptable level of less water use agriculture, although this is not defined in the EAR. Rolling Hills Farms is also allowed to farm the property as they see fit, but they cannot use any GMOs, they can't have any permanent crops, and we assume that grazing is an acceptable agricultural use. The farmer can also purchase State Water Project Table A water for irrigation if Santa Clarita Valley Water decides to release water to him. The amounts available are shown here in the table. So we need at least a 35% or 36% allocation to for him to ask for 500 acre feet, and then he can get up to 2,000 acre feet. Although the agreement that we have with him specifically says that there's no guarantee of water. And he's only taken about 450 acre feet of water since 2017. And then there's the budget. There's an approximate budget of $200,000 a year. Taxes are about $85,000. We pay Wheeler Management Services for management consulting, an amount of about $30,000. And that is Tim Wheeler, who used to be an employee here. He goes up there once a month, if not more often, to keep track of the farmer, make sure that he's doing his work that he's supposed to, clearing the roads, keeping weeds down and that of that nature. And then we also have like a kind of a flex bulk maintenance cost in there, about $85,000 that we very rarely use. The last time we did use it was a few years ago when the turnout from the California Aqueduct gate was broken. So we had our guys go up there for a couple of days and replace everything, replace the gate, replace the valves and all that. So that was probably the only time anyone from operations has been up there doing any work. The Water Resources Department also manages easements and lease requests. And we are members of the Westside Water Quality Coalition, which helps us with our yearly nitrogen management reports, yearly fire evaluation reports, and yearly potable water testing reports that we have to do via the state regulations. Devil's Den also has quite a few wells on the property. There are about 40 of them, with six of them remaining active for the farmer's use. Due to the high salt concentration of the wells, only certain crops will thrive on the property. He has grown watermelons in the past, but mainly he's growing, he's trying to grow alfalfa, or he's growing basically fodder for the cattle. SCB Water owns the State Water Table A allocation, but property owners other than us do reserve their groundwater rights if they have any. Since there's no farming activity on non-SCB Water owned properties, I think it's unlikely that there's any other wells that are being used in Devil's Den. So what's going on currently in Devil's Den? So Rolling Hills Farms has a grazing operation. Right now they have about 270 herd of cattle that are currently grazing out there. I think the maximum we've had out there is close to 700. And then he's been replacing fence replacement, or at least repairs, with a more secure fence over the last few years. He's also been doing the mechanical weed removal along the fences and road lines. And then Wheeler Company monitors the future solar location for plant growth, and Rolling Hills Farm is tasked with mechanically disking those areas if there are weeds present. The Alamo Springs solar agreement that we have pays for that part of him going out there to do that disking. And then we also have three pending projects related to solar generation. We currently have an option agreement that is set to expire at the end of this year with Alamo Springs. They were planning a 250 megawatt solar generation facility on about 800 acres. They continue to prepare their final MND, and they were told when they brought the draft MND to the county They found out from Fish and Wildlife that they were also in need of an incidental take permit for a kit fox that they didn't find, but Fish and Wildlife think is up there. We also found out recently that their interconnection agreement with PG&E had expired. And back in, I think, August, they had asked for an extension since it does end at the end of this year, the current agreement. And then we have 8-minute energy solar generation. We received a request for a lease option on Kern County property. Their solar facility would be on somewhere between 1,400 and 2,200 acres and generate between 400 and 800 megawatts. And then finally, we're working on an access agreement for a third solar generation company who's developing a facility that will be located just to the east of our property. So not on our property, but adjacent to it. The request easement would be 30 foot wide, crossing over three Santa Clarita Valley water parcels to give them access to their lease property for construction and maintenance. And lastly, there's a short little video showing the water running through the California aqueduct at our Devil's Den turnout. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Rick, for your presentation. Before we go to questions, April, do we have any members of the public who wish to comment on this?
We do. Just a moment. Well, the person with the last three digits, I think I've got a number here. It's Joan. Ms. Dunn, go ahead and hit star six and you may begin your public comment.
Yes, thank you very much for letting me speak. I really appreciated that presentation because it is so, it's out of the area and so many people don't know that much about it. And I think that all the information that I just heard was very, very good. Some of it is new information. And I really appreciate the presentation. The one thing, though, that I am disappointed with is how the public can talk about the issue if they can't hear the discussion first. And that's what the attorney had said at the first of the meeting, and I was thinking, public being left out? Why are you excluding the public with this new policy? I think that the presentations or the questions, the issue should be said first, and then the public has a chance to add to it or question it instead of trying to imagine what they're going to say and having to have the question first. So I am very disappointed in that issue, and I think that it should go back to the way it was. Anyway, again, though, I do want to thank the presentation on the Devil's Den. It was very well done. Thank you again.
Thank you, Ms. Dunn. Ms. Naltmeyer, you can hit star six and you may begin your public comment.
Cam Naltmeyer. Yes, I have been following this property for actually when you first got in there and formed the water company, even before that, because LOFCO, the Los Angeles Formation Commission, had told you when you went through that process for you to get rid of that property. In other words, they were saying this is not something that a water company should be handling, and that's becoming clearer and clearer. This water has a lot of salt in it. It's not water that you can match up. I don't know how you're doing it when you're saying you're putting it into the aqueduct. I would like to want clarification on that. If this any water is leaving this property to go into an aqueduct where you are getting credit for water. I don't hear that. I can't find it anywhere. I've never been able to find it. Are you actually receiving any water or credits for any water from that property? If not, you really need to get out of the business that whatever you think you're doing there. I remember the meetings they used to have, and they would have the meeting, but you could not ask any questions. And I thought there's something wrong with how this is being handled, and it's something wrong with anybody on a public agency where they're elected to represent the public to say the public has no right to hear this. And I'm getting that feeling that they're doing the same song and dance now. That I would really like to see the records of what the water company is getting from this in actual water benefiting the water agency. If there isn't anything like that going on, then this should be deleted and you shouldn't be going through this process at all. And if you can clarify that and say, oh, we are credited with so many gallons of water or whatever, I would like to request a copy of those documents, because it's clearly to me from what Lovko was saying, you are supposed to be disposing of this property.
Thank you, Ms. Noltmeyer. Your time is, your public comment is up. There is no further public comment.
Thank you, April. I guess I would like to clarify that what first CLWA and then SCV Water got out of this deal was a 12,700 foot table A amount transferred to us that we now can use. To my knowledge, we're not exporting water from the site. We're taking the 12,700 foot acre foot table A amount and using it to our benefit. Is that correct, Rick?
That is correct.
Thank you. All right. With that, we can start. And I will also want to mention something to Ms. Dunn, if she's still listening, about our decision to entertain public comment before we had open board discussion. We used to do questions and then public comment and then board discussion, but the questions always seemed to bleed into discussion and commentary rather than just questions. And so to simplify the matter, we just moved public comments before board questions, discussion, and comment. I will take your comment to heart and we'll give it consideration for the future. So thank you, Ms. Dunn, for your public comment. With that, we can take questions, comments, and discussion from the board, and I will entertain Vice President Gladbach. You go first.
I just wanted to commend Rick for a tremendous presentation on this. I thought you did a great job and really enjoyed the video.
Thank you, sir.
Yes. Director Armitage.
Thank you. I also want to say thank you for the presentation. I appreciated the digital aerial tour. That was helpful to kind of get a feel for where the Devil's Den district is in relation to where we are now. I'm the type of person that likes to go on field trips and see things for myself. But given COVID, that's not all possible right now. So this was a good second best option. I do have a few questions. This is all very new to me, so I am learning a lot of this for the first time. So I appreciate you bearing with me. I have some kind of more basic questions, I think. I'm trying to get a better understanding of who else is living and working around or in the district in the portions that are not owned by SCV Water. So my questions specifically are, what is the population of, I guess, the people who are in the other parcels? I don't know if that's the right terminology, of land in the district. I was thinking about something else as you were talking about information about the elections process and noticing the people who live in the areas not owned by SCV Water. So if you could repeat that, please, that would be helpful. And then my third question is, I know there was an election notice recently posted on SCV Water's website, which at the time I didn't really know what that was all about. And so I'm wondering, is that process still open? And if not, what was the result of that election? Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Director Armitage. As for the population is zero. There is nobody living on Devil's Den property, on property that we do not own. There's really no people living anywhere on Devil's Den. It's strictly a farming area. There's no other homes. We have in the center of the property, we have a workshop area where the farmer keeps his materials and things of that nature in a yard. But as for people living there, there's nobody living in Devil's Den Water District. As for noticing, Tim Wheeler, like I had mentioned, he goes up and gets the notices from April, and he posts them in three or four places up on in the areas up at Devil's Den. So unless somebody that owns property happens to be there in the month time that it's posted, either on electric poles or inside on the door at the nursery or at the yard there, those are the places where we post the notices. So unless somebody happens to go by and sees them, we just do not have any information on the 30 odd parcel owners, since they don't live there. They're probably from all over the country if they can even be found. And then the last question was the online. I think, I don't know for sure, and maybe even April can answer this. I think we post it online as well. It's the same posting that we post physically on the property. We also post it online, I believe.
We do. We post it online. We post it down at the front desk. We also post it in the newspaper, the local newspaper out in Kern County.
Thank you, April. Mm-hmm.
Very good. Director Armitage, go ahead.
Well, I just went, but actually, can I ask a follow-up question?
I'm sorry, Director Brownstein. I was looking at Director Brownstein. I said Armitage. I don't know why. It's okay, getting late, you know.
I'll raise my hand again for my follow-ups in relation to that. Thanks.
Go Director. Ahead. You're on a roll. You might as well go.
Okay. Well. Okay, thank you. I just, the posting doesn't make sense to me. If people don't live there, and the people, I don't know. There's no records of the property owners where the postings can get sent. And then, I don't know, that just seems odd to me. And then the election results, you didn't cover that, answer that question.
Oh, there is no election since nobody has offered to, nobody has volunteered to be part of the election. So if nobody's wanting to be on the board, our board at SCV Water, they're the ones that nominate the board members.
And the results of that election, the process that happened, that ended the first week of August, nobody had pulled papers. So since nobody had pulled papers, the two directors that were up, which were Director Cooper and Director Colley, will be appointed by the Board of Supervisors to the Devil's Den Water District.
Okay, so there won't be a reconsideration of the current list of board of directors to be considered for those roles?
Not at this time. They are reappointed.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Mr. Byrne, did you want to add something?
Yeah, President Martin, I just wanted to give a little bit of context because it is different from what we're familiar with. So it's a California water district, which is essentially a landowner-based district. So the only people that are allowed to be on the board are landowners or representatives of landowners. So SCV Water has designated by resolution some time ago the people who are on the board. And as the cycles come, we put them on the ballot. And as April said, nobody has ever run against them. because there's very few other landowners that are obviously not involved. And we're not a typical district. We're not imposing any kind of, you know, rates or anything like that. So there hasn't been any opposition. And in the process, similar to what would happen if you ran unopposed or any of you did, the county then appoints whoever is the unopposed person running. So again, it's a unique situation because it is, and voting, by the way, is by assessed value of property within the district. Or if that's not readily available, then it's 1 acre equals one vote. So regardless of who is participating, the weighted votes are in favor of the, you know, obviously with owning 90% of the property, we're able to cast all the votes. Although we've never had to do that, but that's how landowner-based districts work. And there are many of them, mostly in agricultural areas throughout Central California. So it's not a one person, one vote area.
Thank you, Mr. Byrne. Mr. Byrne, now we can go to Director Bronstein.
Thank you so much. I know Kathy and I are twins, but with the glasses, we look alike. I had a few questions. One was, can you tell me like approximately how far away is it? Like if I drove up there, is it like an hour away, an hour and a half away, 2 hours away? Just trying to
can tell you exactly how far it's okay. 140 miles, and if you drive the speed limit, it takes almost 3 hours.
Okay, I'll do my own math.
Yeah, do your math on your rate of speed.
Okay, and so then my questions were, I wanted to know like what. So aside from the whole fact that we would win anyways if we went to elections, because I think you said that we own 84% of the parcels there or something like that.
Correct.
What does it give us that we being on the boards of director, like what's the bonus for us for representing that area? I mean, from what I understand, that allotment of water is already ours, table A, like it's already part of ours for forever. So it doesn't really matter. As far as that goes, is there any other benefit for us being up there, like as the board of directors?
Well, maybe Dirk might be able to answer this better, but I mean, some of the things are the other options that we have up there, the solar generation facilities, things that can bring, bring in money that will help to offset the costs of projects that we do down here would be one of the things. And I think that they vote on those as well, but I don't even know that we vote. The Devil's Den Water District, their meetings are very short. And I'm not actually sure how much they vote on that. They are the same people that are on, obviously, the SCB Water Board. But I honestly don't know if there's any extra benefits of having a water district, other than I think we have to keep the water district the way it is. But I'm not even sure of that, but maybe Joe or Dirk could answer that better.
I think one of the benefits is that we're able to take advantage of certain financing options that are available to us by forming a joint financing entity. And doing that allows us to issue certain types of debt instruments. I think Eric and Rochelle would be able to give you a better feel for those financial advantages. Yeah,
I was going to say that, but I want to make sure you perhaps had another angle on it too. The Devil's Den Water District happens to be the other party in the two-party joint powers authority that issues our revenue bonds. And it is those revenue bonds that are price advantageous over certificates of participation, which is what we would be able to issue as a single entity. And so many, many water agencies have found a partner, either a neighbor or some other entity that they can jointly team with to then create such a PA in order to issue revenue bonds for their projects. And it's enough of a savings that it's worthwhile from that standpoint. I think beyond that, it's not clear to me, and maybe Dirk could answer this, whether there's any other strategic value as it relates to the physical assets and turnouts up there, whether we need the Devil's Den entity for that any longer or not. And it is a good, I'll point out, it is a good question, Director Bronstein. It's a question that has come up over the years. And the primary answer that seems to be left is this joint financing entity. But we also are kind of ask ourselves, you know, are we going to miss something if we dissolve it and wish we hadn't, given that the ongoing carrying costs of the entity are so small? So,
okay. Yeah.
And we've also been approached by other entities wanting to gain access to that turnout and convey water across our property, which we've up to this point in time have declined to do.
Okay. Well, that makes a little bit more sense now. I understood the physicality of, you know, having the solar farms and that kind of income. I just didn't know why it was important for us to be on the board, like have a board kind of situation. And then my last question was, seeing those lovely cows, I couldn't help but wonder, since it's also right next to the aqueduct, are we worried about a lot of like contamination from fertilizing and
everything is fed. The aqueduct is completely fenced in throughout the Devil's Den area, so the cows can't get to the aqueduct, first of all. There's no way of getting on into the aqueduct, and in fact the entire property, especially when he kind of moves his cattle around the property, depending on how much fodder's in the ground for them to eat. When he moves them, he makes sure that fences are up. In general, the entire property is fenced. But when he tries to keep them in a smaller area, he refences and then takes that fence out and kind of shifts them as he moves. He shifts the fencing to keep them away from the aqueduct. Not that it's not a concern, just because the state keeps track. They have a fence of their own that the State Water Project has that's not related to Devil's Den, but does go through to keep things out of there.
And we're not concerned about other contamination for the groundwater there or the wells. We're not responsible for any of that.
No, the aqueduct is solid. It's a solid bottom, so it can't leach, you know, through from the farms itself. I suppose eventually something could leach into the cow dung could leach into the ground, but it's no different than any other farming grazing operation. And to be honest, he probably grazes 1/50th of what he actually could graze out there. So it's pretty minimal.
Okay. There was a lot of wells there. That's why I was wondering, because I know there's salt in those wells, like it's salty water,
correct?
Saltier water. But I realized, I was just thinking, if there was extra contamination, if we're responsible for any, you know, it's all good.
No, because none of them are used for drinking water. We know not to use them for drinking water. We do have one well that we've actually just been recently told that we have to test, because it does bring water to the building that is on site that we own. And that test came back fine. There was no contaminants in the water. So,
yeah. And the natural groundwater there is, relatively speaking, higher in salts, and the strategy that the previous farmer used was to blend the higher quality State Project water along with that groundwater in order to have suitable water for his crops.
Okay, thank you so much. I'm sure I'm going to have more questions, but this is a new topic for me too. Thank you again. It was a great presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director Bronstein. Director Flambeck.
Yes, I had two questions. One was if the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency is the owner of the land, and that's why we have representatives there, right?
Correct.
Yes.
So why is it that the board doesn't make a decision as a whole in who the directors are that are appointed? It's not, I don't understand.
I'll jump in.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, and I haven't been around. So there was a resolution passed some time ago that appointed or selected by the board the representatives who are currently on the board. It would certainly be within the board's authority and ability to put up a different person. They serve for a term for the water district. So when the term is up, if as a landowner we wanted to have different people on the board could certainly decide to do that. The resolution that originally appointed the people who are currently on the board has been in place for a long period of time.
Well, I hope the next time there's an election, we maybe consider having a discussion about it. It seems sort of unfair that's sort of just continued on for years and years and no one gets to have any input on it. The other question I had was about weed control. Why was there a mitigation about weed control? And I would just like to say the reason I'm asking is because if you disc everything down to nothing, which I understand is being done on part of the property, it seems to me that we could run into a really big dust problem and like DWP's problem with Mono Lake end up being responsible for something like that. I don't know that that's the case, but I'm just curious about why we're disking. Why don't we just leave them?
Mainly because we do not want habitat to form on the properties where the possible solar projects would be. The area out there is very flat and they get very little rain. So in the 4 years that I've been taking care of Devil's Den, we've only actually had to disc a small portion of the property once. The rest of the time it's either disc because the farmer's planting something, or or the cows are actually taking care of the weeds. A majority of the weed mediation is done by his cattle. So we actually don't do it very often. We don't disc very often. It's mainly for the solar facility that we have an agreement with.
So you have an agreement to disc for this company to make sure that what kind of habitat are they worried about having developed?
Well, I believe any type of habitat would throw their solar facility, would cause them to do many more possible mitigation measures to install their generation facility. So I don't know exactly what they're worried about. I do know that there's some endangered species up there, mainly the kit box. But as for that, other than that, I do not know of any other endangered animal that is up in that area. I think there might be a toad, but again, there's no water up there 90% of the time, probably. So it's basically a measure to keep those things out of the areas where they'd like to put the solar facilities.
Sounds like you got the kit fox anyway.
They did.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
Right. So, Vice President Gladbeck.
Yes, thank you, President Martin. I just wanted to respond to Director Bronstein's comment on the wells. All the wells except six are capped, Beth. Okay, so they can't use them. So
that is correct.
I thought you and your question.
All right. Are there any other questions or comments for Rick Oh, I see Director Colley has his hand up. Go ahead, Director Colley.
Yeah, I just wanted to real quick say that being a director on Devil's Den Water Board is not a particularly exciting position. Board meetings last about 5 minutes. We have them once or twice a year. It's not a position that's enviable in any way. It involves a lot of pain in the neck, paperwork that we have to do to file and all that sort of thing. So it's not a huge, exciting, powerful position that's worth anything. Just wanted to mention that.
Thank you, Director Colley. Any other discussion or questions for Rick before we thank him once again for the presentation? I think it was very informative. And even those of us that have been on the board, you always learn something new when you hear from the staff on a presentation like that. So
unless there's further... I just want to say, I forgot to say thank you. That video was great. I really appreciated the tour up the pipeline. That was very interesting.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Rick. Appreciate it.
Sure.
With that, we can move on to item 8, General Manager's Report on Activities, Projects, and Programs. Mr. Stone.
Thanks. Well, since we just had a meeting last week, I'll keep it brief. And we also have a very long closed session yet to get through tonight. I'll just say I want to echo the appreciation for staff. I know there are a number of areas where board members have asked for presentations, and we're really glad to be able to put this together for Devil's Den tonight and appreciate the patience while we try to find the right time. And this was sort of a theme night, except for the owl boxes and rain barrels on Devil's Den. So more of the theme night to come in closed session, and you'll probably get a few more insights based on that discussion. I'll also just mention from a COVID standpoint, we've had a few more cases that have come up. No further cases where anyone else in the office may have been in contact, so that's been helpful. I think we're up to now 30 total cases for the entire time, and 13 in what I call the Delta period, this starting this summer. So we do have a series of safety tailgate meetings planned with staff, mainly just to check in. It's been a long time since we've been able to have any kind of face-to-face interaction. So we're doing small groups outdoors to just check in on the issues, make sure people are comfortable with our planning and our measures and understand what's going on. Talk about, sort of where we are and just provide an opportunity, hopefully, for some two-way communication with different groups of staff next week. So that's been keeping some of our support staff for that very busy as well, on top of the rest of the activities taking place. But I'm hoping it'll be a good opportunity to kind of take stock. We've been at this for a little over 18 months now. It's amazing when you think that. And, fingers crossed, maybe another 6 and we'll be out of the woods. We were hoping that was going to be 6 from the time the vaccinations came out. So that didn't quite pan out, but maybe it'll be 12 from the time they came out. And appreciate the board's support also. I think that was an important signal to the staff last week on extending the leave provisions, because there are still some cases and they're not all unvaccinated staff. I know that was one of the concerns, although clearly the numbers are showing vaccinations have an advantage. I think I looked today of the 13 post-Delta cases, or I guess post-vaccination cases, which is about the same because the vaccines came out in April and we had gotten through that winter wave. Of those 13 cases, I believe 8 were unvaccinated or not all the way there yet. Two of those 8 were had one shot, but not gotten through the whole thing. And when I do that math, it's about 3% of the vaccinated employees have contracted COVID since April, and about 9% of the unvaccinated employees have contracted COVID. So that's one of the things I'll try to highlight in the discussion that we have coming up. We know it's a tough situation. We know all about what the national dialogue has sort of gone off the rails. It's like being at a bad family party where, Uncle Phil gets a little drunk and Cousin Charlie does too. And everybody else is kind of going, what the? And there's some truth in what Uncle Phil is saying and probably some truth in what Uncle Charlie's saying. But we've got to try to focus here in the workplace just on what do we need to do and leave some of that exciting overlay, out of it. And concentrate on the safety aspects. And that's why I've tried to couch it as a set of tailgate meetings, is to try to hopefully focus it that way. We're here to keep each other safe and to practice measures. It's no different than confined spaces and fall prevention and trench shoring. These are all things that we do and try to watch out for one another with. So that's it. I probably waxed a little too poetic on that last part, but I just want to reiterate the board plays a role in providing, the resources and the support to continue trying to do our best here. And I do truly appreciate that. So thank you. And that'll be the end of my comments for this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. April, do we have any public comment before we go to questions from the board?
We do not.
Very good. So we can entertain some questions, comments, discussion. I see Director Ozahosky.
Mr. Stone, recently directors have been asked to sign the ACWA JPA Commitment to Excellence Program document. Can you just briefly talk about that and what is that for?
I think I can a little bit, and I don't want to steal the thunder from Director Gladbeck, who I think was going to speak to that in his comments as well. So essentially it's a set of practices that JPIA has put forth to kind of ties in with trying to promote safety and reduce liability and hazards, obviously as an insurer. And I think previously CLWA had signed on to that. They'd come to their attention that our makeup had changed, obviously, with the merger. And I think it's a good opportunity for the new board to consider it. We may have jumped the gun with the email today thinking it was obvious to everybody, and we did get some questions about it. So I expect we'll take whatever time we need to make sure people are comfortable with signing on to that. But it's essentially an acknowledgement that we're trying to support those practices in order to maintain a good safety and liability record.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Stone. Vice President Gladbeck, is this something, this commitment, do we do that every election?
No, it's kind of a lifetime thing.
Okay.
Once you sign off, the idea is that you continue practicing it. I was going to give a talk on the director's report, a little bit more on it. So,
and right, we have to be careful not to drift into an unagendized discussion of the item. But I'm happy to, if we need to discuss it more, another option is we can agendize it. So.
I don't think that'll be necessary. Vice President Gladbeck, I'm looking forward to your quick summary during your director's report. Back to you, President Martin.
Very good. Thank you, Director Ozahosky. Is there any other questions for Mr. Stone before we move on? Very good. Hearing none, seeing none. Thank you, Mr. Stone. Appreciate it always. We can move on to item 9. committee meeting recap reports for informational purposes only. You have in your board packet, I believe, three reports. So are there any questions? Well, before that, I guess we need to ask if there's any public comment, April.
There is not.
Very good. Are there any director questions, or if the chair wants to add anything on the various reports? Seeing none, we can move on to item 10, written reports for informational purposes only. There are five written reports in your board packet. Are there any public comments on item 10, April?
There is not.
Very good. Are there any questions from the board on those reports? Very good. Seeing none, we can move on to item 11. I will try to be brief with the president's report. I'd like to update the board on a few things. First, the Southern California Water Coalition annual meeting and dinner is being held at the Long Beach Hilton on October 21, 2021 at 5:30 p.m. The State of the City is being held at the New Canyon Country Community Center on November 4th at 3 p.m. The Aqua 2021 Fall Conference is being held in Pasadena from November 30 through December 2 this year, and the conference is being held both virtually and in person. And we do have now a new date for the SCV Chamber State of the County. For those who originally registered for this event, the new date is December 9th, 2021. It's being held at Six Flags Magic Mountain. The doors will open at 10:30 and the program starts promptly at 12 noon. And there'll be more information to come. It should be noted that there'll be no new registrations will be accepted, but there is a wait list if you are interested in attending and your name is not already on the list. A couple of other announcements. The special redistricting kickoff meeting has been confirmed for October 27 at 6:30 p.m. And unless the board acts differently on the October 19th meeting, it will be a virtual kickoff meeting. There will be a special board meeting to discuss the GM review on Friday, November 5th, 2021 at 1 p.m., facilitated by Mitch Rosenberg, as we did last year. And once again, right now, that is likely to be a virtual meeting. And that concludes the president's report. Are there any public comments, April?
There is not.
Now, I do believe that April distributes that report to each director, but if you don't have any questions, we can move on to item 12. Item 12, AB 1234 reports. There were some AB 1230 reports that were submitted with your packet. Does anyone have any additional AB 1234 reports? Seeing none, April, were there any public comments on the reports that were in the packet?
No, there is not.
Excuse me?
No, there is not.
Thank you very much. We can move on to item 13, director reports. And this is where we pass it to Vice President Gladbach, who also chairs the JPIA board, and he can report on the Aqua JPIA Certificate of Excellence. Go ahead, Jerry.
Yes, Joe, is it okay? I wanted to go back and give a little, since we have a lot of new directors or some new directors, is it okay for me to go back and talk about the origin of JPIA? Is that a yes?
I think that's fine, Dr. Gladbach. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I wanted to give you some background on it because it's a great organization. Can you hear me okay? Okay. In the late 70s, insurance was really hard to get. And if you did get it, it was very expensive. So 80 members of Aqua joined together to form the Joint Powers Insurance Authority to obtain insurance on their own, basically a group of self-insured. Castaic Lake Water Agency was one of those members. We now have four categories of insurance: liability, property, workers' comp, and health benefits. There's around 300 members total, depending on which program. It's from 275 to 350 members. Annual revenue is about $200 million. The focus of JPIA is prevention, and they do that. They really focus on that. They, you know, we figure that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So they do that by webinars, by training, either webinars or in-person training. They also have field risk consultants. There are six of them scattered throughout the state that come and visit every member agency at least once. And depending on how good you are or how bad you are, you may get more than one visit a year. The I think the Santa Clarita gets one visit. Because we're large, we may get two visits a year. And so, you know, the whole thing is being preventive. You know, as Andy Sells, the executive officer, says, the best claim we get is no claim. The program of commitment to excellence is, the idea of that is to bring to people's minds. First of all, they listed six of the primary or the most common types of claims, and those are vehicle operation, construction, infrastructure, employment practices, ergonomics, and falls, and wildfire prevention. And under each one of those is several items that basically a suggestion to be thinking about and to include in your tailgate discussions so that people focus on those things. Again, it's a matter of being, to me, safety is a mindset. And the more you talk about it and focus on it, the more safe you're going to be. So that's all I had. I mean, I'm not sure what all of you or each of you were distributed. Did you get the whole list of items? Yeah, okay. So what it is suggestions to be conscious of in your work, everyday work. So I don't know if there's any questions. I tell you, it's a great organization. They've done a great job. And as an aside, you know, we get, what, Eric, 1% interest on our investments. JPI has formed in Utah the California Water Insurance Fund, which is primarily there as a vehicle to increase the revenue. And we've gotten 13.8% annual revenue return on investment, you know, for the last year and a half. So that keeps the rates down. You keep going on that. And right now there's around $100 million invested there. So, and the total investment of JPA is probably $200 million. So give you an overall sense of JPIA. So any questions?
Very good. Before we entertain questions, Vice President Gladbach, April, are there any public comments?
There is. Just one moment. Ms. McDougall, you may begin your public comment.
Yes, thank you very much. I do apologize. This is a subject a few proposals back, so I just want to quickly go over it because I wanted to get it in before you went to closed meeting. First of all, thank you for you guys talking about everything, and the presentations were fabulous. I learned a lot tonight. In regards to the incentive programs, just wanted to say now is the time to invest in these important incentive programs. Specifically, when properly installed and widely used, rain barrels can provide individuals emergency water in future drought conditions to create resilient communities by empowering residents to become interdependent with water agencies is critical to California's future. So with that out of the way, the other thing I wanted to mention was regarding the incentive programs and helping them out a little bit, perhaps the Water Board may consider more opportunities to share educational resources and build alliances with such organizations as Tree People. I recently had the privilege of volunteering for Tree People on the San Francisco Conservation Chaparral Project, as the board members know. I was impressed with their leadership and knowledge. They currently offer a community forester leadership training program and may provide further resources to the Water Board to assist with current challenges in fine-tuning maintenance issues, as previously discussed. I am sure Tree People can offer assistance with brainstorming on training for these incentive programs, provide ideas for education, etc. Tree People is very familiar with the Southern California ecosystems, soil conditions, and provide lots of information on YouTube for the public. Just wanted to say that. Thank you so much. I appreciate all of you and your hard work.
Thank you, Ms. McDougal. Please, in the future, if you don't mind, could you make your public comment on a specific item when that item comes up? We didn't stop your public comment tonight, but we wanted to remind all of the members of the public when commenting on a specific item, please make your public comment when that item is being considered by the board. But otherwise, thank you for your interest in our program. Are there any other, by the way, I want to remind the board that this is the time to cover informational items. So are there any other director reports? Director Brownstein, you have your hand up.
I had a question about
Vice President Gladbeck. Okay. Go ahead. Yeah,
I'm sorry. I just wanted, it sounds like a wonderful organization. And I guess I just wanted a little bit more clarification on what it is exactly that we're expected to sign on to, and what's the expectation then on our behalf, or what's the ramifications? What are we agreeing the agency to for the rest of the agency's life?
Yeah, right. Beyond our lives, right? Basically what it is, it's our commitment that we're going to do a good job and that we're going to follow these practices. Obviously, a lot of the practices don't apply, but, you know, it's to, you know, a lot of the subjects that are there are great topics for tailgate meetings or for group safety meetings. So it's, the idea is that we focus on those things and keep them in mind when we're doing our everyday work. Does that help?
Is there any other kind of obligation, any fiscal obligation, any things that we're supposed to attend?
No.
So it's just basically us saying, yeah, we're going to
practice. We're going to be good boys and girls.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. It's kind of like a Cub Scout promise or something like that, you know?
Like a what?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Are there any other director reports tonight?
I think Director Planbeck has a question.
Director Planbeck, go ahead with your question.
I just wanted to say thank you to Vice President Gladbeck for clarifying that, because I was confused as well as to what we were signing on. And I really appreciate you taking the initiative and bringing it up and explaining it. Thanks so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Director Armitage.
Thank you. I echo the thanks to Director Gladbach. And additionally, just really quickly, I also want to acknowledge that this week is Water Professionals Week. So I just want to take a moment to say thank you to everybody at the agency, all the staff members, everybody in administration, and my fellow board members here for everything that you all do to serve our community safe and affordable and reliable water. So it's an honor to work with you all, and thank you.
Thank you, Director Armitage, for that. Appreciate that. Director Atkins.
Real quickly, Vice President Gladbach, did you cover the fact that JPIA, we pay all of us pay premiums, and when we don't have claims that equal the premiums, we get some of that money back? Did you cover that?
I did not, Director Atkins. I'm glad you pointed that out. That was one thing I forgot to mention. There's, like I said, well, actually, there's, I don't know what number I said. Yeah, there's roughly 400 members. I said 300 a while ago. There's roughly 400 members in JPIA. This past year, we gave out checks to 192 of those members. Some of the checks were in $300,000 or $400,000. We gave it out a total of $6.2 million. And that's all based on your safety record. And it's not just for the past year. It goes back, you know, performance and as far back as 10 years or so. So, yeah. And besides that, you know, the rates for JPI are the cheapest you're going to get. And on top of that, you get a rebate if you're good boys and girls.
Unheard of.
What?
It's unheard of to me. It's great news for us.
All right. Any other questions for Vice President Gladbach on his JPIA report? Okay, now I can ask, are there any other director reports tonight from members of the board? All right, seeing none, I'm going to, even though we're running late, I want to give a very brief one and let you know that I did attend the Association of Water Agencies of Ventura County 26th Annual Member and Policymakers Reception at the Reagan Library. I know there was a question from one of our directors, I think it was Director Bronstein, on what this was all about. So just to let you know, Director Bronstein, this is the Ventura County activity, but we've been partnering with United Water Conservation District on some issues of mutual interest. And it's an opportunity to renew our acquaintances since we don't get to see them very often. It's an excellent event, and there's really no cost to the agency to attend. And this year, the keynote speaker was Suzette Martinez-Valadares, our 38th Assembly District member. And the award this year for the Water Leadership Award was to the City of Camarillo for a recharge project. And that's, I'll just make it very quick. The disappointment was that Mauricio Guardado, who was formerly with our agency, was not in attendance. I really wanted to check in with Mauricio, but I understand he's doing well. So that's the end of my report on that item. And I suppose we need to ask if there are any public comments on that.
There is not.
Thank you very much. We are concluded with the director reports. And next item is closed session. We will be going into closed session for the items listed in your agenda. And I believe we have taken one item off of the, I think we announced that when we started. So we'll be going into closed session for four of the five items listed in the agenda. And I would remind the board that you need to log off of the Zoom meeting and dial into the Teams meeting for the closed session. Please remember that you are in closed session, and please be in a location where the public cannot hear what you are saying. And with that, I think we will take a 5-minute break. It's 9:53. And we will try to get into closed session in 5 minutes, 9:58 or at least 10 o'clock at the latest. So please log off of the Zoom meeting, and we will see you in closed session in the Teams format to cover the items on the agenda. Thank you. We are now back in open session. Madam Secretary, will you call the roll for attendance?
Director Armitage, are you present?
Present.
Director Kelly, are you present?
Present.
Director Colley, are you present?
I'm here.
Director Cooper, are you present?
Present.
Director Osohosky, are you present?
Present.
Director Atkins, are you present?
Present.
Director Bronstein, are you present?
Present.
Director Plambeck, are you present? Director Plambeck, you're muted.
Yes, I'm here. Barely.
Director Ford, are you present? I think we are missing Director Ford, so I'll come back. Vice President Gladbeck, are you present?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen, are you present?
Present.
President Martin, are you present?
I am present.
And I do not see Director Ford. Back to you, President Martin.
All right. We will proceed and let Director Ford join us in progress. We go to item 15. That's his closed session announcements. Mr. Byrne, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll announce that there was no action taken in closed session that is reportable pursuant to the Brown Act.
Very good. I don't suppose we need to ask any public comment because we didn't take any action. Item 16, director requests for approval for event attendance. Are there any requests for event attendance? Seeing none, we move to item 17, director requests for future agenda items. And please be mindful that items that are informational, that you can get the information from staff, I would ask that you consider that as opposed to asking for an agenda item. An agenda item would be something that the whole board should receive information on and would benefit both the public and the board at a regular meeting. Are there any requests for future agenda items? Director Armitage.
Thank you. I think back in June when we were discussing the water shortage contingency plan, there was reference in the document to emergency plans that the agency would use in times of emergency or disaster. And I mentioned I'd be interested in learning more. I think that it would benefit the whole board to learn more about that. Although I know there was mention that it's sensitive information included, so that might be something more for closed session. So I just wanted to express my interest in that again. If appropriate, when appropriate, I would be interested in hearing that information. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Any other requests for future agenda items? Seeing none, we can move on to item 18, adjournment. Thank you all, board, for your patience tonight. Thank you, the members of the public who might still be on. Thank you for your participation. And we are adjourned, and we will see you next time. Thank you, Joe. I see you're waving.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you. Good night. All right.
We'll work on your airman skills, President Martin.
Very good.